Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. There seems to be a little bit of a disconnect with my my computer. I think it's resetting now. There's about 30 seconds off the clock, so hopefully all will go well. I'm never for sure with Blog Talk. Things can get a little crazy. This is our second of these amazing panels that we did. We did one last week. We're going to do this one. Next week, I'm probably going to shorten it a little bit. We'll go back to 1 hour, and then we'll have more time for, and probably have fewer guests. But because we had so much fun last week, I wanted to try and do it again and get a lot of folks on. We've got John Cullen on the line already, Dr. Jim Thorpe's on the line, Dr. Judy Mikovits is on the line. So usually I'll play this theme for a guest of the day, but pretty much all these folks are my guests of the day because they are the world's greatest COVID doctors and guests. So it's an amazing thing to be able to get these folks together, especially because they do get together in conferences and things like that, but I don't know how much chance they have to talk to each other. And whereas a lot of times we got the presentations last week, I think the interactions of these absolute geniuses and courageous warriors is going to be fabulous to see what happens. And I don't know what's going to happen. This is the fun thing about Action Radio. The first rule of Action Radio is that there are no rules to Action Radio. So I'm going to make my folks live. I got John Cullen. We got Dr. Jim Thorpe make his line live, and Dr. Judy Mikovits, and then we'll see who else joins us. But let's start with the new guy who was on the show once before, who's got a microphone and is going to sound just like me. He's got that radio voice. John Cullen, good morning, sir. How are you? Yeah, you're on. Is he still working the microphone? Uh-oh. Should we wake him up? Hey, John, you're on. John, talk to us. We might have to text him. I might have to write him a little note or something like that. We'll figure it out. All right, so let's start with Judy then. So give a quick introductory statement for our new listeners who might not have caught everything you said last week, and shame on them. Go back last week and check it out. So enter in. It's like a game show. Enter in. Sign in, please. Who are you?
Well, I'm Judy Mikovits. Dr. Judy Mikovits. I'm a biochemist, molecular biologist. So I just show you all the pathways. And last week I talked about, you know, all this BS. They injected those mouse and monkey and manufactured viruses over the last 40 years. And if we just turn away and turn back to God, we'll just be fine. We just got to stop injecting poison into us. You know, nothing new. And they just keep playing the little pandemic game. Oh, here it comes, folks, monkeypox. Yeah. Yeah, that monkey cell line we've been using in our polio vaccine for, I think, 40 or 50 years. So it's been in our bodies a while, and we have an immune system if we just feed it, and I don't mean poison it.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is why I love having Judy on the show, though, because she always has something cool to say. And so when the other folks are like, you know, oh, gee, what do I do? It's like, yeah, just jump right in. Dr. Shipper, enter and sign in, please.
Well, good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me on your show. And Judy, good morning. It's wonderful to meet up with you again. And it was so good to see you down here in Pensacola at our meeting. So I am a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist. I'm also a board-certified maternal fetal medicine specialist. I'm an old guy. I've been around the block. Many times I see 6,000 to 7,000 high risk obstetrical patients a year. So I'm very busy clinically. I'm very busy in the COVID research and in doing the analytics. My specialty really is the vaccination in women of reproductive age and the vaccination in pregnancy and COVID in both of those groups as well. But I'm pleased to join you, Greg. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, this is wonderful. This is my pleasure to have you guys on. So let me thank you. John, have you connected? Or are you ready to chat? Because your microphone's live here. John? Hello, John. I wonder what he's doing. I might have to take a break and send him a quick email or something like that. I don't think I have a well, I could do a text. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, let me get our official Chinese gong, the Wuhan gong. to open our festivities here and our discussion today. So we're now open for business. Let me just do a quick thing. I've got a ton of topics, but Judy, anything in the news that we should know about and the latest developments of the deep state globalist cabal plandemic response team? what are they up to now? Oh, I think John's here. Was that you, John?
They're running and hiding.
Oh, that's good. Well, let's get the latest. Then I'll talk to Jim, then see if we can get to John. I'm going to send him a quick email, tell him he's live. I'm going to do that right now. So, Judy, feel free. Give us the news, and then I shall continue with all. I got a great theme I want to develop with you guys. We'll see. We'll get started on that.
Oh, actually, really, they really are running and hiding because all of us doctors are getting together. Jim said, we had a fabulous time in Pensacola. And so I've spent the whole week just saying, everybody's calling me saying, here's some, you know, bee pollen from Dr. Janice Schmidt was talking all about honeybees and clean bee pollen. So I got a whole mailbox full of all these great healing solutions when I got home. So I've been working them up and handing them out to the victims of this plague of corruption. So I had a fun week.
That's incredible. See, I've heard about this before too, that local honey, bee pollen. Now you're saying that is the pollen better than the honey in terms of healing and getting over the vaccine injuries?
I think both. It just depends on how clean it is. That's what I love Jana Schmidt, because she has, you know, both. She makes the pollen, and then she has the honey, and she brought it to the meeting we were at in Pensacola, so we all enjoyed it. So, yeah, both of them are really good for you. So when you have a good, clean source and you're experienced like she is, it's fun to pull it apart and use it medicinally.
I can just see a bunch of these folks passing around the bee pollen. What are you guys like, high school? This is great. You're like, hey, don't want to do the joint anymore, man. Here's the bee pollen. That's right. This is good stuff. All right. This is the good bee pollen, right? I can just imagine you guys doing that. But something I've always wanted to do, Jim, you're all old. Yeah, but we're still here. That's the main thing. Jim, every time I see a bottle of honey, especially natural raw honey, it says, do not give to children under 1 year of age. I'm curious. Why is that?
No,
am I talking
to you?
To
me, Craig?
Is this like Taxi Driver? Are you talking to me? There ain't nobody else here. I'm talking to you. Yes, Jim. I know you're busy. I know you're coming in and out. So I'm making fun of Jim, but he's doing other things as well as talking on the show. Yeah, honey. I'll just ask you again. You know, honey is not given to kids under 1 year of age. I was curious why. Is their system not able to handle it yet, or what's the story on that?
Honestly, I as soon as the child is born, it's out of my wheelhouse. So I can only speculate on why honey would not be used in the first year of life. One of the speculation might be the osmotic load of the sugar in the gut, which could potentially cause a problem. Certainly, it's not a problem in pregnancy.
Well, that's interesting. Well, considering all the sugar in baby food. I think honey would be the least of their problems. But that's interesting. And so I wonder, wow. So you can't have the natural products, but you can't have, you know, a gazillion injections and a bunch of other stuff. Let's get John Collins, see if his line is working. John, are you with us now?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, Greg. Oh. I fixed the problem.
What happened? I'm just curious.
Oh, you don't even want to know. You don't even want to know.
Then I'm not going to. Oh, we got more panelists joining us.
I'm here.
Okay, good. So
who do we have on the line? Because I wasn't able to hear anything to this point, so forgive me, please.
Well, my this is where I need a producer, because I'm actually busy pushing buttons at the same time. If I've cut anybody off, please call back. We've got John Cullen. We've got Dr. Jim Thorpe. We've got Dr. Judy Mikovits. I just connected up Jerome Bell, who's running for Congress. And I'm looking up one more person here whose number I don't recognize. But that's Brian Artis is on the line, too. So I'm gonna go to Brian and then Jerome. John, I'm going to start with you. John's been on the show before. He did the most amazing expose of the Spanish flu, about the bodies in Alaska, and the fact that they brought this horrible stuff back. So maybe you can kind of summarize what's happening since we talked and why they actually did this. That'd be a good place to start.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me on the show, and hello to the other members of the panel. Hi, Dr. Judy. So Dr. Judy and I have met before. We've done some programs together. So my background, for the audience that's not familiar with my work and for the other members of the panel who are not familiar with my work, I was at Oracle 34 years ago and was the head of the project that created a system called ESRI's ARC Info. And this was the genesis of geographic information systems. And this was 34 years ago. I was the lead at Oracle to build this system that today is being used by Johns Hopkins and the WHO to map the outbreak. And in March of 2020, when the WHO declared a global pandemic, I published material that said, well, wait a second, there aren't 10 people dead in Shanghai, Beijing, or Hong Kong. Why are we declaring a global pandemic? And that ended up with me building a relationship with Laura Ingraham privately, and we ended up talking about the data from the CDC. And I provided her with information for about, 6 or 9 months up until the election in 2020, all during a period where there was no vaccine. So my focus was on the root cause of the pandemic, given that China has fewer people dead than Ohio. And today, Beijing doesn't have 10 people dead. Shanghai, with all the lockdowns, doesn't have 750 people dead. So that was sort of the angle I was coming at. In other words, I'm not a virologist or an epidemiologist. I'm a data guy. I'm a data guy that knows maps. And you don't have to be a data guy that knows maps to look at the map and say, how many people were dead in Beijing? 9? And yet you declared a global pandemic. Why would you do that? So that's my
background. Unless they knew ahead, and which is what we talk about. See, this is the beauty of this show, the fact that I have a bunch of lines, because we can bring in people of the most incredible expertise and then put them together in the same show. And we can do things that a lot of other folks can't do. What I want to get to, especially when Patrick Wood joins us, is the technocracy angle. And I want to talk to John about this too, because it seems to me that when this started, Event 201, with the World Economic Forum, where they basically rehearsed their plandemic in October of 2019, my initial thought was, and I heard about it later in the year in 2020, and I heard about this and I thought, wait a minute, why is the World Economic Forum dealing with a pandemic? Wouldn't the WHO, the World Health Organization, be doing it? And that's when I realized very quickly that COVID really is an economic marketing scheme. And most of the problem with this is economic. You know, you look at the masks and the lockdowns and the closures and everything else like that. Those are economic restrictions. So the reason I love having John here is we're going to be able to talk about this a little bit. Do you see it as I do? And can you fill in some gaps that this really is on the world scale, as much as it is a health and a population control and everything else? It really is an economic control system. John?
I think that the COVID pandemic is something like a 3-act or a 4-act play. And the act of the play that I'm here to focus on is Act 1 before there were vaccines. Because before there were vaccines, millions of people were dying of COVID, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And, right, so once you get to the vaccine baton zone, which was December of 2020 when President Biden received his, right? That's where Dr. Judy
did he receive it? Right? I think it's up for debate. You know,
well, whatever. So that's where Dr. Judy and her expertise come into play. My expertise was very early in this. I had identified something else that appeared to be sort of a different narrative, a parallel narrative that was happening at the same time that nobody seemed to want to talk about. And that's something that Dr. Judy and I talked about, which is something that Dr. Fauci, Francis Collins, did in 2004, 2005. Mm-hmm. And so when Dr. Mikovits went to the FBI in 2004, Ray Kurzweil was trying to stop Dr. Fauci. Ray Kurzweil is the guy at Google today. He's a senior fellow who invented the Braille reading machine. Kurzweil synthesizers. He's a futurist. Patrick Wood's going to know all about him. So Ray Kurzweil, this Google fellow, and the founder of Sun Microsystems, Bill Joy, who's a billionaire, write an op-ed to the New York Times that gets published in 2005. And what they're saying is Fauci and Collins are out of their minds. They're resurrecting the 1918 H1N1 virus from bodies in the permafrost of Alaska. What are they, nuts? This is the deadliest virus we've ever seen. And they're going they're going to gene sequence it and then synthetically recreate it. So Ray Kurzweil and Bill Joy write this op-ed in 2005. It's in the New York Times. You can read all about it. But this was happening coincident with Dr. Judy trying to blow the whistle. And the reason that Dr. Fauci is the highest paid person in the government is because they resurrected the H1N1 virus, and it was considered the most strategic asset that the United States has ever had. And that's why he's the highest paid guy in the government. Because
as a bioweapon,
Dr. Fauci and Francis, well, they will never admit to that, of course not, that we can preventatively create vaccines in case somebody else created a bioweapon.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Russians could dig up their own frozen corpses.
Yeah.
Right? And they could do this to us, so we better do it first. And that's the logic.
Well, so could the Russians, the Chinese, and everybody else, you know, every other terrorist dictator in the
right.
world. They could go to another country. Yeah.
Right. Well, if we don't dig up some H1N1 bodies and create a vaccine for it, somebody else will, and they'll attack us with it. So that was the thinking in 2005. Ray Kurzweil tried to put a stop to it. Dr. Judy tried to put a stop to it.
Right.
And the FBI wouldn't have it.
Yeah, see, I would disband the FBI, but that's for another show. Dr. Brian Artis, welcome to the show. And you will, I have a federal disarmament bill that I'm going to start working on, too. I'm not only going to disarm them, but I want to get rid of certain departments that there's nothing in the Constitution that says we can have a national police force. And I've got Congressman candidates. Oh, I actually elevated him already. Congressional candidate and Navy Chief Jerome Bell's on the line, too. So I'm going to get to him as well so he can kind of listen in and get caught up. Dr. Brian Artis, enter and sign in, please. Welcome to the panel.
How is everybody? It's good to be here. Happy Thursday morning.
That's for you guys to talk to.
Oh, yeah.
So what I'm curious about, of course, is the snake oil connection, that if we have the H1N1 flu, and we've got snake oil, and we've got this bio, and we've got the flu shot, and we've got everything else we're going to talk about today, how could they possibly have coordinated, or are there like different efforts doing different things at different times, and they just threw it all together? Brian?
Well, I'm sure everyone here already knows this, but I was reading a MedPage article yesterday, and it's obviously very clear to a lot of people, unfamiliar to me until recently, that even monkeypox, this thing we're talking about sometimes in the media over the last couple of weeks, that even monkeypox, COVID, was all created not by gain of function. This wasn't a man-made thing. It's all due to climate change, Greg. I'm learning about that right now. Climate change behind all of it. And there's 40 years of data I was just reviewing on Nature Journal that they were predicting these outbreaks 40 years ago. So due to global warming and the climate change. So anyway. So
monkeypox is climate dependent?
Very interesting and surprising. And I'm trying to make sense of it all because it doesn't really make sense to me, even though Bill Gates is quoting that literally, I was reading his quote a minute ago, it's quite clear in this case that COVID came crossed through animals and almost all of our diseases like HIV crossed over from chimpanzees in Africa quite some time ago. Ebola came from bats. This also with one step in between came across from bats. So it's going to keep happening, particularly with climate change where we're invading a lot of habitats. And you want to catch it as soon as you can. Bill Gates, non-graduate of any college, health professor, obviously, of many, many topics. But anyway, I had no idea. I don't understand why we listen to these people who have no education in health or backgrounds in health. Judy, what say you about the climate change?
Good question. Judy, go ahead. Yeah.
I just wonder how those lab viruses, like those infectious molecular clones, ended up in that bat cave in 2011, or those two papers were published about the synthetic SARS-CoV-2 in 2004, right next to the flu-nami that John Cullen just told you in 2004. I mean, the publications are all right there in Journal of Virology. You know, they came right out of the lab, and, you know, that's why they're cremating everybody now, so because they already pulled what they did was they identified the codons, the particular base pairs that made it the most toxic, and then they put them all in the database, as David Martin tells us, and they're all in the database. I mean, they publish them all in the papers. This is what I'm showing on the Crimes Against Humanity. So look, you made these monkey viruses, and you've been injecting them in people in every single polio shot since 2004, and we're all just fine if we just don't listen to you and poison ourselves.
So I have a question, Judy.
I don't think it has anything to do with climate change. They were in bad
I have a question. I was actually wanting to ask Judy this. I wondered if maybe they, back in her day working in labs with all of these viruses, if they actually just increased the temperature on the thermostat in the lab, and did that make the viruses more gain of function pathogenic or infectious? Like, could you just change the temperature in the lab and make those more infectious?
No, that's not how it works, son.
Okay. So I don't know what Bill Gates is talking about.
Just,
he thinks
they're
the whole world's
fine.
A laboratory. It's all heating
they're
up.
Little immortalized cell lines. They grow forever. They can just like they grow in the flask. I was demonstrated with a salt and pepper shaker yesterday with that 0.2 micron filter. For anybody who doesn't know, that's 200 nanometers. I think it's about 10 times smaller than 2 or 3 N95. And everything goes right through them overnight. So when the CO2 is at 5%, oh, that might be climate change, Brian, and you're in an incubator at whatever, 98.6, and it's humidified, and you set the human cell line, the salt, next to the pepper, that's the monkey or the mouse or the manufactured or whatever they want in there, the cow, the dog, the pig, whichever they want to get in there. In the next morning, you can see pepper in the salt shaker. How'd it get through that 0.2 micron filter if nobody touched it in a sealed container? You know, just saying, that's what they knew. They knew that for a fact, how long it took. In only 2 weeks in a fermenter, like a big craft beer container, 2 weeks, every lot of beer that you make, you get 4, 5, 10 new recombinants. And they published that all in 11 and 13. They knew exactly how to make them by then. It's all published in 2011. And then they just recreated all of literature between 11 and 18 and said we evolved from monkeys. I guess we're going back to the monkey game. And I don't know. I don't know how that's not racist. But it's just me. I don't know.
Very good. Actually, I'm very excited that Judy just brought up racist, because I want to read the second article that's bothered me the most this week, since this has become a, you know, 2 week in a row, 3 hour incredible panel. I love this report here, and I've been pointing this out for the last at least 8 months publicly, that the CDC is marketing to two races primarily, blacks and Hispanics, and targeting them with COVID disinformation and misinformation. Yesterday, they published an article in MedPage titled, "Did Pulse Ox Levels Lead to COVID Therapy Delays for People of Color?" The study finds that the pulse ox overestimates oxygen saturation for minority groups and gets to the point, it says, that for blacks and Hispanics, when they're putting the pulse ox on their finger, that it's over-exaggerating how much oxygen they have. Which means if they are seeing, unfortunately, that their blood oxygen levels are above 94, the whole article is about blacks and minorities, Hispanics, are actually seeing oxygen levels on the pulse ox above 94 when it's really not above 94, because that's the cutoff to actually give all of these groups of people remdesivir for COVID. And they're being denied remdesivir because the pulse ox isn't reading accurate oxygen saturation levels for the blacks and the Hispanics. Now, I mention this once again because it isn't them that they claim are dying at the highest percentage of a population. It's actually the Native Americans and Eskimos. Just go look at the CDC's data tracker for every state for every week since the pandemic started. Yet they continue to refuse to acknowledge that group of people are hospitalized and dying at a higher rate than anybody else. But they do continue to try to scare these two races to subserviate themselves and volunteer themselves up for remdesivir treatment. and to scare them to get the vaccines. And to me, this is a continuation of a eugenics program, and they need to lay off these people. I'm really sick and tired of them picking on them. And when you actually look at the numbers,
Planned Parenthood.
It doesn't even matter how they spend this. It doesn't even matter how they spend the numbers. It doesn't. It is not blacks as the numbers even that are dying or being hospitalized more than anybody else for COVID. It's not even the Hispanics that are hospitalized or dying more than anybody else. By total in America, if you look at their data, it is whites are actually the number one overall number of people who are being hospitalized and dying. It doesn't even matter how you spin it. They're not being honest and they're not being ethical, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's, two things real quick. One, the more you folks talk to each other, the better. I want to bring on congressional candidate and retired Navy Chief Jerome Bell into the conversation here, and then we'll get to John. But to, like, I said, and the other thing is, if you want to mute yourself when you're not speaking, we won't get some of the background noise, and that'll help us also. Jerome Bell, welcome to the world's greatest doctor and expert panel, and you get to ask anything you want. Good morning, sir.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone. Now, I'm just sitting here listening to all the people that's smarter than I am, you know, about
me too.
This, you know, and, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm just soaking up all of this knowledge. And, I mean, but, you know, you mentioned something about, you know, just now about black people dying and, you know, things like that. Well, here's the thing. They've definitely been marketing it to the black community, but the black community is still one of the lowest unvaccinated in the nation.
That's good.
And that's because
that's a good thing.
And that's because we understand what they've been trying to do to us for years. We, you know, with the Tuskegee experiment, and everything else. You know, we just don't, you know, put stuff in our veins and our arm. Well, not in our veins, but in our arms, you know, coming from the government. We don't trust the government. And unfortunately, some of us, you know, we have, because they've been, you know, threatened, you know, to take our jobs, and what I've been noticing lately, you know, a lot is that these billboards with the COVID signs and the COVID message, you know, with the shots, they all have black people on them now, or the commercials, they have black people. So I'm
like,
black
interesting?
People are Hispanic, you know, so yeah, so they're still marketing it to the black people. And yeah, and that was the scare, you know, when it first came out, oh, black people are catching COVID at a higher rate. You know, we're going to die because we have the highest rate of diabetes. We have all of these comorbidities and things like that, right? You know, and I know a lot of people that I know then, well, we're going to die from that. We're not going to die from this COVID shot, you know. And so, and you know me, I'm against the vaccines. I'm never going to take it. They'll have to, you know, tie me up, probably put something in my head first. But no, that'll never happen. But, yeah, you're definitely right. They still want the black community as the highest vaccinated, you know, because, you know, I honestly think they still want to kill off black folks.
I want to get John in the conversation too. He's our guest here. John, did you want to let's go? John, Brian,
yeah, some,
Jim, Judy, you, and then back to Jerome.
I've got some data that backs up what Jerome Bell was saying.
Okay.
I have a channel on Rumble. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Rumble.
Oh yeah,
but they have
I'm on it. I was on Brian's show. On Rumble. Yes, I made TV. Sorry.
Beautiful.
I'm done.
All right, so I've got a channel on Rumble. The name of my channel is I Am John Cohen. And on the channel, there's a video that I made, August of last year. And the title of the video is America's Blacks versus Africa's Biggest, SARS-CoV-2 Showdown. And it's based on something that Kamala Harris said. And she said that we know that COVID targets black people more than other people. And so I went to the CDC data, and I pulled out the racial breakdown, which they publish. I think Dr. Artis was saying, you know, it's right in plain sight. They publish it. So I downloaded it, and I looked at the data, and I found that the population distribution in the United States and the distribution of COVID deaths, not cases, I focus on deaths, was exactly as Dr. Artis described, meaning the distribution between white people, black people, and Hispanic was pretty much within 1% of the population distribution. And the group that was suffering the most was Native American Indians, Native Americans. So that's absolutely what the data shows. Now, what I further decided to do using my mapping background was I said, well, wait a second. If what Kamala Harris is saying is true, and it does target black people more than white people, well, why don't we go somewhere where we can find a lot of black people? Let's go to Nigeria, because Nigeria has 200 million people, and not that many of them are white. So we go to Nigeria, we look at the map from Johns Hopkins and from the WHO, and we find out that Nigeria, with 200 million people, has fewer people dead than West Virginia. Now, how do you explain that? Now, last week's show, you said something, Greg. You said that, you know, you say this often, assumptions are stronger than the truth.
Yes.
And
that's
Lisa
one of our
Babbage
primary
was
themes
on the show.
Right here. Yeah.
And Lisa Babbage was on the show talking about cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of the master of cognitive dissonance. I drop things into conversations that make everybody very uncomfortable.
I like this guy.
And that's
already.
It's one of the advantages of having Asperger's is I really don't care. Right? So I just do these things. I really don't care about how it makes you feel.
I can have three conversations.
It doesn't matter to me how this makes you feel.
Okay.
Beijing doesn't have 10 people dead.
Huh.
End of story. So if that's what Johns Hopkins is reporting, and Shanghai is barely touching 700 dead right now, isn't that like something where you say, well, whoa. What? Taiwan, with more people than New York, has fewer people dead than Rhode Island. Nigeria has fewer people dead than West Virginia. Ethiopia has 110 million people, but they've got fewer dead than Ohio.
Doesn't that make
everybody on this call just say, what?
No, I mean,
what do
I'm
you
thinking...
mean Beijing has 9 people dead according to Johns Hopkins?
According
to Johns Hopkins. China has fewer people dead than South Carolina, according to the WHO. According to the WHO's map. I'm telling you, this is the guy who built the mapping system. Yet you can look at the map, click on Beijing, and it says 9. You don't have to be a mapping expert to click on Beijing. It's just nobody's done it.
Two questions coming to mind real quick. First of all, that's brilliant.
Ask Siri. If any of you guys are on mute, ask Siri how many people have died from COVID in Beijing while you're on mute, and tell me what kind of answer you get.
You know, that brings up two real quick questions that I want to open up to the panel. One, why is China locking down? Do they have early treatments? And the other question is, in Africa, is the chloroquine and ivermectin for parasites and malaria prevention, has that prevented COVID? Do you have any studies on either of those?
Assumptions are stronger than truth, Greg.
That's why
you're assuming what you're assuming what you were told was accurate.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to challenge the panel. What's the number one comorbidity of COVID-19, according to the CDC? What is the number one comorbidity of COVID-19, according to the CDC?
I'm going to say diabetes. That was Dr.
Anybody else? Any other takers?
Yeah, I'll say diabetes as well.
Would definitely be one of them.
Okay, here comes the truth.
Okay.
John?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything now. I know he's got an answer. Judy, do you want to try? You want to take a stab at this?
Judy knows.
Well, I'm a Native American, so I think it's being a Native American, COPD and obstructive airway disease, and you poisoned us with glyphosate. That's where I'm going.
That's a whole other story. But the truth is, you can go to and this is what I do, guys. This is what I do full time. I go to the CDC's website because I'm an Oracle guy. This is what I do. And I take their data. The number one comorbidity is, again, it's in plain sight. And it's influenza.
Right.
Influenza.
We know what that opens up. We're going to Judy next. Go ahead, John.
All right. So when you look at the numbers, 5% of the numbers reported in the United States died with just COVID-19 on the death certificate. On average, 95%, everybody else, had 4 comorbidities. On average, there were 4 comorbidities. The number one comorbidity is influenza, PNI, influenza pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
But influenza, so there's sort of like 2 different narratives on influenza. One narrative says influenza disappeared. But the other narrative says, but it's the number one comorbidity. And here's the part that, again, nobody on the panel knows this except for Dr. Judy because she came on my show. In January, February, and March of 2020, 4,000 people a week were dying in the USA
mm-hmm.
of influenza, PNI, January, February, March. The president declares a national emergency Friday, March 13th. And on that day, there were less than 100 people dead in the United States from COVID. But 4,000 people a week had been dying from influenza since the first week of January. 4,000 for every week. And the second week in March, he declares a national emergency. Now, prior to that, President Trump was kind of dismissive of this thing. Right? He was like, yeah, it's like the flu. Come on. Right? He was rather
dismissive of the flu. Yeah.
And he said, well, it's kind of, you know, he says, yeah, come on. You know, we're not going to panic. And then on March 13th, he declares a national emergency in all 50 states. And then he did something else that you guys may remember. We rolled out field hospitals. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yep.
Yep.
Dr. Artis, yep. You remember the field hospitals? Dr. Thorpe, you remember that?
Yep. I do.
Now, you guys are all over the country, right? I know one of you guys is like in Texas and... Right? One of them is Florida.
This is a national show, and I got another call I'm going to bring in just a second here, too. But, yeah, this is what makes this so much fun. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. So the call-up of the National Guard, according to President Trump in his interview with Maria Bartiromo, was the largest call-up of the National Guard since D-Day. We deployed field hospitals in every major city, not just Jacob Javits. That's the one you got to see on the national news. But we deployed them in St. Louis, Sacramento, Rhode Island, Miami. There were field hospitals throughout the country. You guys remember all that?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the ships, and we moved the Hope and the, what was it, the Hope and the Glory or the Hope and the something, and we moved the ships around. And then we put the field hospitals away 10 days later. On May 1st, we started to disassemble them and put them away.
Why?
Why do that?
I was waiting for that.
Why did we put them away after 10 days? Was the pandemic over after 10 days?
Yep.
Do you remember how many patients those field hospitals treated for COVID? Or do you remember them saying, don't bring your COVID patients here. These hospitals are just in case the hospital system is overwhelmed.
Oh.
Huh. Overwhelmed by what? COVID? For 10 days. And then we decided that risk was over, so let's put them all away? This thing's been dragging on for over 2 years. And on May the 1st, the field hospitals started to get deconstructed. And nobody noticed.
You know, it's hard to keep all the pieces together in your brain. I have a timeline that I've built to add things like this, but I remember that.
Here's the conversation. Yeah. Here's the conversation I had with Laura Ingram.
Okay.
I contacted Laura, and I said, the field hospitals are not for COVID. We need to talk. And on a Sunday morning, I did a Skype session with Laura Ingram, and I showed her footage that I had recorded from a website called The Sky Live. Basically, it's a visualization tool that allows you to take JPL data and visualize it in 3D. And I created a 3D sort of a recording of what had been happening, what had just happened, and what was about to happen, according to JPL, which is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at NASA.
Mm-hmm.
On March the 28th of 2020, something happened that hasn't really happened in about 50,000 years. March 28th, 2020, just 2 weeks after POTUS Trump says there's a national emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And this event that takes place, there hasn't been anything like this in 50,000 years, and yet you guys didn't hear about it. Now, why didn't you hear about it?
What was it?
Because you hear, you hear, well, I'm going to tell you in a second. you hear about similar events. You hear about similar events all the time. And they report on these similar events all the time. And then there's the culmination. Then there's the grand, you know, the grand, and it happens March 28th of 2020, just 2 weeks after the president declares a national emergency. And that's when we start deploying field hospitals. Right there, right then.
Mm-hmm.
What happened March 28th, 2020? Well, it happened in Akure. It happened in Akure, Nigeria. A-K-U-R-E, Nigeria, Akure. And on March 28th in Akure, Nigeria, the Earth, for the first time in about 50,000 years, was impacted by a meteor. It created a crater for all to see.
Hmm.
And we're not talking about a small bolide. We're talking about a crater something like 60 feet across.
Wow.
And this happens in Akure, Nigeria on March 28th of 2020. So for those of you who saw the Netflix film, Don't Look Up, this kind of happened. And the video that I made from JPL shows about 30 asteroids converging on Earth on April 28th. And that's what
March
I showed.
Or April?
What I showed.
Is it April
28th after. Yes,
oh.
After Akure. So Akure would have been like the first one. Like, Mr. President, you need to see this, sir.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is hit. And the JPL thing that I have shows about 30 more converging on Earth April 28th of 2020. The field hospitals were put away May 1st. And then on May 5th, the closest asteroid in history to pass the Earth and not hit passes just 5 days later. Something happened. Big enough to ruin your lunch for sure. If it landed
one of those asteroids.
Yeah.
Here, what happens if a big enough one hits?
So you guys can look this up. You can pull up Akure, Nigeria, March 28, 2020, asteroid crater, and Google it, and you'll see a whole bunch of people standing around an asteroid crater. Well, when was the last time this happened? If we're
Wolf
always
crater,
hearing
Arizona.
About these close calls, why do you not tell us when one of them hits?
Hmm.
What were the field hospitals for again? And you put them away after 10 days. Huh.
Hold on to that thought just for a second. I want to bring a new person in just so they don't feel neglected. And this is a number I don't recognize, so I hope I have a good caller here. Otherwise, I have to do the boot thing. Our new person who just heard the word unmute, you are now unmuted. Welcome to the show. And first name, or if you're a public figure, full name, and where you're calling from. Going once, going twice. Okay, back on hold. Had your chance. So, John, tell us now how this all ties in.
So, well, let's go back to Jerome Bell, Navy Chief.
Right.
Chief Bell, there was another one of these benevolent operations called Operation Sea Spray that I did a video on my channel on YouTube. It's not called I Am John Cullen. My YouTube channel, I named after J. Edgar Hoover. Because it's kind of an alternate universe. Because the J. Edgar Hoover building in Washington is kind of a dark place. You don't really want to be associated.
Yeah, I used
so
to
I
work
have an
there.
Alternate. Yeah, so I named my channel John E. Hoover because that's J. Edgar's real name. It's John Edgar Hoover. So my channel name is John E. Hoover on YouTube, and I did a video there highlighting Operation Sea Spray, where the U.S. Navy sprayed San Francisco with bacteria.
Oh, I know about this. I've heard about
this.
To
see how it spread.
Yeah.
Yeah. So So we got Operation Sea Spray. You can find that on the Johnny Hoover channel. You've got Operation Crimson Contagion, where they took another bacteria and purposely infected people with it again to see what would happen. So, you know, assuming that the government always has your benevolent interests in mind, or you know, maybe naive, I guess, would be the best way to put it. So you hear about Operation Crimson Contagion, you hear about Operation Sea Spray, you mentioned Event 201. The thing about Event 201 that, quite frankly, I have to dismiss it, Event 201 was 3 hours. It was an afternoon meeting. It was 3 hours. It went from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. You want to talk about Clade X. Clade X was the year before, and it was multiple days.
Ooh,
all right.
What's
they've
that?
Been doing, yeah. So they, all right. So they've been doing this stuff for years, right? For years they've been doing this. 1 year it's called Clade X. 1 year it's called 201. You know, next year. In fact, they did one on monkeypox. I've got all the documentation on that. They did a simulation on monkeypox as well.
Great. Right.
So assumptions are stronger than the truth.
Yep.
The number one comorbidity is influenza. 4,000 people a week are dying of influenza, January, February, March. And Dr. Fauci resurrected the deadliest version of influenza. This is the only BSL-4 strain of influenza. Dr. Thorpe, Dr. Artis.
What's that mean?
Right, BSL-4 is the deadly. It's like Ebola, Marburg, the deadliest stuff on Earth. Dr. Judy, you want to explain BSL-4 to everybody?
Yeah,
and your balloon
biosafety.
Suits.
Yeah.
Biosafety level 4 is complete. Balloon suit, like you have total oxygen into your suit. It's the Fort Detrick Biosafety Level 4 that's run by USAMRID, U.S. Army Research Institute Infectious Disease. I did all my Ebola work in there in the 90s in the Biosafety Level 4. So you're in a total suit, no, the air's in, everything's supposedly filtered. We now know that they shut down Fort Detrick because the air was going out to the air and the water to the water in 2019. So we got that. That's biosafety level four.
There's only one influenza that's BSL-4, and that's the one that Fauci resurrected in 2005, this H1N1. Guess what? The number one presentation is. So now, Dr. Thorpe, the number one presentation of the 1918 H1N1, you ready for goosebumps? Cytokine storm.
Oh, that's interesting.
They called it the Blue Death, Dr. Thorpe, because people's lips were turning blue. And when they did the autopsies, their lungs had turned to mush. Does this sound familiar?
Indeed.
Jim, are you there?
Yes.
It's kind of scary. It kind of makes you wonder if this H1N1 were to get out, but Dr. Judy could put this thing in a sequencer, and in a matter of 40 minutes, she'd come back and go, what are you kidding? This is the one that Taubenberger did in 2005. Dr. Judy could identify this strain in a matter of minutes.
So
she'd say, this is Taubenberger strain. So what do you do? You need another virus with almost identical presentation and symptoms.
Okay.
Now, what happened in 2019 in Australia? You guys know Ciro, C-S-I-R-O in Australia?
I do. I
that's
live
their
BSL. Yep, I know.
Okay,
I know
so that's their BSL-4 lab. They've got a couple of them, but Ciro is the big bad one, right?
Okay.
2019... Australia has the worst influenza outbreak since 1918. In the summer of 2019, right before the Wuhan games. And then January, February, March, 4,000 people a week are dying of influenza in the USA, according to the CDC. Again, this is CDC death certificate data from Wonder. I'm an Oracle guy. I'm hitting Wonder.
What's
and
Wonder?
It's showing me 4,000 a week. 4,000 a week. This is their death data database at the CDC. And
you know,
it's showing 4,000 a week from influenza. So what do you do? You need another virus that you can blame on the Chinese.
Oh.
That also has a cytokine storm.
What is the second storm? Let's talk about what that
Doctor,
is. I don't think
Dr. Thorpe, you want to, or Dr. Judy, you guys want to explain the cytokine storm? Because I'm a data guy.
Yeah. Yes, a cytokine storm is what killed a large proportion of the young, apparently healthy adults in the 1918 influenza pandemic. And what happens is that there's a variety, massive number of inflammatory mediators that are stimulated after an infection. It's usually after the initial infection. It's not in the first few days, and oftentimes in the second week. And this inflammatory mediators can cause a widespread, massive deconstruction of the support of the human body for a variety of reasons, a lot related to the fluid, increasing membrane transudation of the fluid, pulmonary edema, maybe hypertension, pulmonary hypertension. And it causes a spiraling cascade. It's usually seen in people are younger that have a more vigorous, prominent immune response. So somebody at age 80 might be less inclined to have a complication of a cytokine storm than a 25-year-old.
So what is it? What does it attack? What does it do? Is it like a super immune response, or what exactly is storming? What's and I'm still not quite clear on it.
Yeah, it's an inflammatory response. So it's
okay.
An on and off switch. Your body basically senses at the cell membrane, as Jim just said, that there's a problem. So it turns on the innate immune system. You know, it's a danger-associated molecular pattern or a pathogen-associated molecular pattern. And young people, you know, the innate immune response sees that. And so it says, uh-oh, let's turn on what NF-kappa-B, nuclear factor kappa-B. It starts the whole cascade to start the adaptive immune response and literally just send fire trucks to the fire. So the cytokines are, you know, IL-6, IL-8, the chemokines, IL-8 is a chemokine, which is sending the trafficking molecule to send the fire trucks to the fire. Where do we need to go? At the hematopoietic, at the blood level, TGF-beta is the master regulator. Do I need to wound heal? You know, you've got a major damage, you know, and you go wound heal, and your dimmer switch on the cytokine storm is your endocannabinoid system, your endogenous God-given cannabinoid system. It says, oh, no, that's not a big flame. That's just a grass fire. And what happens when you wear a mask is you deplete oxygen, it goes unchecked, and all these other things, you get other shots. They're intended to create that cytokine storm because that's your inflammatory immune response to an infection. And it drives literally a disease engine that can't be turned off because the stimulus never goes away. And that's how they drive that.
So what does your body end up doing then? What does the body end up doing with the cytokine storm?
Well, normally,
who wants to go?
Normally, it will develop antibody responses, adaptive immune responses, memory
immune
responses.
So that's the normal response.
And the flame will shut down. But if the oxidative stress or and other things continue because it's unchecked, and this is where when John's talking about influenza and comorbidities, you already have that flame on anytime you have an itis going on. Inflammatory. That's where, you know, hydroxychloroquine comes in, Plaquenil. If you've already got arthritis, you've already got a low-level fire and you just throw gasoline on it. And if you give a flu shot, that was the 2020 paper was of Alan Wolf, was they did 15,000 people in the military. And if they got a flu shot between 2017 through 18-19 season, you remember when everybody got that dry cough and the flu shot was only 10% effective. Well, in 2020, you realize from the military who were all experiment upon, and that's why we were talking today, you know, they were fourfold more likely, 36% more likely to get a diagnosis of COVID in 2020 if they got a flu shot between 17 and 19. And so that pandemic influenza A strain was in the flu shot that went to, Italy and some other places that were in those flu shots.
I remember that.
Oh, in Italy. Yeah. And so that is, that's the basic, that's the premise of everything.
I found it ironic. I found that ironic.
People think you're getting one antigen and you got a million antigens and you're injecting all kinds of monkey blood, cow blood, pig blood, chicken, and there are viruses in all of that are in similar family members. So that's what makes the shot so deadly and drive these pandemics. That's what they know.
But if you've got this cytokine storm as a major presentation element from both the H1N1 Spanish flu from 1918 and SARS-CoV-2, because in the first year of SARS-CoV-2, we kept hearing about these cytokine storms.
I remember.
And basically, it's like your immune system is in overdrive and your immune system ends up killing you is effectively what happens to the people who are dying with the cytokine storm.
That's what I understood. It goes haywire.
And kills you.
And so,
right? So
I did an experiment in 1990s. I think it was 93 or 94. I did an experiment. I published it, and I showed it in a talk on April 4th, 2020. But I did an experiment. I took primary human innate immune cells, monocytes. That was my PhD thesis. That's the driver of these cytokine storms and AIDS. We call these signatures of disease, not in the infection. So when you look at the signature of HIV and the signature of XMRV, the mouse viruses, and that are in all of these shots, I mean, I'm sorry, they're all there. But at any rate, when you look at the uninfected, so I took the pathogenic Ebola strain and the non-pathogenic Reston strain, and I always say I don't know any bat caves in Reston, Virginia, but I know the CIA. So you infect with the pathogenic strain, and you get the exact cytokine story, Ebola, of COVID, of influenza, of AIDS, of the people with ME/CFS and autism that got disease. It's the signature of disease. And when you identify the signature of disease, that cytokine storm, then you find the infection and you isolate the virus. The Reston strain did not give you that signature of disease. That was published in 1994. They knew exactly what they were doing. And that's what Tony Fauci released the Ebola in 2014 to cover up the little data burning party the CDC and William Thompson had with their experiments on blacks and Hispanics that they were two to four times more likely to have that cytokine storm. That's the disease. So they targeted the codons in the virus. They literally weaponized it so that it avoided the breakdown pathways. It's called RNA cell. It just degrades. It chops up RNA viruses in the blood. That's a danger signal to turn off the cytokine storm. So they turned down switches so people would die.
So, Dr. Judy, you were kind of a twisted, crazy person and you needed a virus to blame instead of the one that you resurrected in 2005. In other words, if the one that you resurrected in 2005 were to get out from Ciro and infect everybody in Australia and Ray Kurzweil was correct in predicting that this is a disaster waiting to happen, could you kind of dial up or pick from a list of viruses and say, well, that coronavirus has such similar symptoms to this influenza virus that if it were to get out, I could probably blame it. And then
Hang on.
All right. I want to share something with the rest of the panel that will also kind of make their jaws drop. When you guys do a PCR test, Dr. Thorpe, Dr. Artis, any of the other doctors on the call, when you do a PCR test, how many strains of influenza does it test for? And how many
all
PCR tests? No, only four or five. And then how many PCR tests test for reconstructed pandemic influenza, the RPI 1918 strain? Zero. So that's how you don't detect it. Because I've had physicians on the show. I had Dr. Roger Schwelt, who has MedCram. He's got over 1 million subscribers on YouTube. And he came on the show, and I said to him, you must be kind of like racking your brain, very uncomfortable. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance hearing this, wondering how did I not detect H1N1 in my patients? And I said, well, are you doing cultures? No, we're doing PCR tests. Okay, well, your PCR test is only testing for H3N5. H2N3, it's only testing for three or four strains. What if I've got reconstructed pandemic H1N1? The PCR test comes back negative. We stopped doing cultures in the early part of 2020. Why did we stop doing cultures?
That was my question. I mean, was it a CDC directive or because obviously they
actually came out of Europe.
Oh,
came out of that creepy guy in Europe that Dr. Mikovits knows, who's part of Fauci's inner circle, that recommended that we move to PCR testing. PCR testing is also EUA, right? That wasn't approved stuff. That was all emergency use authorization to do the BioFire.
The guy that invented the PCR test said it isn't for COVID. It doesn't detect it.
Hang on. What Curry Mullis intended was exactly what I'm describing here, which is if I come in to see a doctor and my physician says, well, you're presenting, you sound like this, it looks like this, could be pneumonia, could be influenza, could be COVID. I'm going to do a culture. We're going to go grow it in a BSL-3 laboratory for a couple of days, and then I'll know for sure what you have. But if I do a PCR test, there's only 22 pathogens in the BioFire respiratory panel. I know I own the stock. I'm a stockholder in BioMiro, their parent company. So when you do a respiratory panel with the BioFire 22 respiratory array, there's only four or five influenza strains. If I had H11N5, it tells you don't have it. It says, no, you're clear. Because it tests for very specific strains of things.
And how
that's
did they
how,
pick
that's
those?
How, well, so what happens is that's how all these H1N1 cases went undetected. They were tested with PCR. And PCR won't find it unless you tell us. So there's no PCR for H1N1 reconstruction.
So you will. So if you get COVID, even if it's a comorbidity, they're going to list you as a COVID death, even though it's a flu death. Flu is going to be listed as a comorbidity, but that might be the main cause. And so they're still cooking the books because they want to hide flu behind COVID. How am I doing?
All the death certificates. So when I'm citing this number one comorbidity, mm-hmm. I'm citing death certificate data that's coming from coroners and medical examiners.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the data comes from. Now, the doctor does get to mark the death certificate, but I believe so does the medical examiner and coroner if they find additional comorbidities.
But they're listing COVID, you know, as the main one. In fact, I sent you the chart that I found from the CDC from July of 2020, the one that shows that COVID basically ended mid-July. It was like 300 death rate they were projecting, and then it went to pretty much zero. The graph was heading – it started January 2020, went up to – the top day was April 15th was the greatest deaths that they were recording on this chart, CDC chart. Then it went like a sharp 45-degree angle down. Pretty much it was heading for – I call it July 4th, COVID Independence Day, because I think it was 300 recorded deaths on that day, but not all the certificates were in. But it was heading for zero. By mid-July, it should hit, or whatever the low, whatever the baseline was going to be. This thing was over. And then they started lying and resurrecting and masking and locking down and everything else to keep this thing going. I believe the government preserved COVID until they could get the vaccines, but that's another story. But what was going on with the death certificates?
Masking will cause the cytokine storm.
So
you will
which
get
raises
the
a huge
same
question.
Answer whether the virus is long gone. That's the point. Everything they did caused a cytokine storm. 5G will cause it if the iron, the ferritin, ends up in the blood above 3,000. That's a test you look for, and that's where the comorbid are going to have that cytokine storm. And same with people with other viruses. So this is, we always for 40 years. You don't look at the virus. You look at the cytokine storm. And we show the retroviruses. They created the retrovirus SARS-CoV-2. It's a retrovirus. It's got HIV, XMRV, and SARS. They weaponized
it. I'm curious. Dr. Judy, I'm curious what Dr. Artis and Dr. Thorpe and Navy Chief Bell, I'm curious what your take is learning that Johns Hopkins and the WHO are both reporting that China has fewer people dead than Ohio. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, to me, it doesn't surprise me at all, to be honest. You know, you mentioned about Nigeria and Africa. I mean, with their protocols that they had over there, they were giving the ivermectin and everything over the counter, but they didn't allow Bill Gates in there is one of the things why. And if they did, they kicked them out. They kicked out the vaccine program over in Nigeria because I believe they've become very, very hip to what Bill Gates has been doing over in Africa for decades. And so, and China, we are never going to know the real numbers out of China because they're never going to tell us. You know, whether it's the WHO or not, you know, China lies. So, you know, I'm sure it's probably much less than Ohio because I don't believe that they even vaccinated over there in China, to be honest. But, I mean, we've had more deaths after the vaccine here than we had with COVID. And my son, who's an MD, he's a medical doctor. He works in the emergency room at Emory University, in downtown Atlanta. And at the height of this pandemic, you know, I spoke with him and he said, well, Dad, we only have 18 people here. And that's in the heart of the city of Atlanta. They only had 18 people in their room, in their hospital that was diagnosed with COVID. And yes, he did say that they were putting COVID on the death certificates until, you know, they found out, until the medical examiner or they did the autopsy, until they found out exactly what they died from, then it was being switched. So, I can definitely see that influenza is the most on there. The comorbidity on there was influenza because he told me that, you know, and that's straight from my son who's a doctor. So, you know, everything here is accurate. And so that's just my opinion on it. You know, I don't trust anything that comes out of the WHO at all. I don't trust anything that comes out of China. I do trust a lot that come out of Africa because I know for a fact that they had less deaths than we had. And so, and then with the number of population, of course, it should have been more, but we assume again, right? And I thank you all very much. I got to go. I have an interview I have to get to. Thank you for letting me attend and be part of this panel. I learned so much just sitting here being a sponge.
You can get the podcast, too. Let me ask you one question before you go. Would you have these folks on a congressional panel, a public hearing about COVID?
I totally would. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I would. Absolutely.
Check this podcast and last week's, and the information's there. And I'm sure we can get you back more times to talk to these folks. And good luck with your next interview.
Okay. Well, thank you. So all of you guys can go, and you all can endorse Jerome Bell. And so we can get you all in Congress.
What's your website?
You up there,
okay. Give your website.
You know, just votechiefbell.com. You can go to votechiefbell.com. You can look at the website. If you guys feel up to it, you know, I definitely can use more money. You guys can donate, but I would love to have your endorsements if you feel that I'm a guy that you can get behind. June 21st is my primary. I'm running against establishment Rhino person, so you know we have to take out the Uniparty first before I can go and annihilate the Democrat. But I appreciate you guys and lady Dr. Mikovits.
Jerome, Navy Chief Master Sergeant Jerome Bell. God bless you, and thank you very much. And you got my vote, and you got my endorsement.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mine too, Jerome. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank y'all very much, and I appreciate it. And Greg, you can give my information. I can get it in writing. That'd be great. If I can get the endorsement or something small in writing, I can put it up on the website and put it up on everything. That'd be totally awesome.
Well, yeah, I think these folks can get in touch with you on your Facebook page, too, and then they can do that. And
Also,
Jerome Bell's endorsed our bills, too. So he was the first congressional candidate to endorse citizen legislation and make it part of his campaign. So he's kind of special around here.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you,
I appreciate you guys. Take care, and we'll talk again soon. I'll be back soon. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Jerome.
So let's take a little bit of a break here, give you guys a chance to stretch your legs, get some, you know, more coffee for Judy out in California. It's still pretty early out there. But it's only 9 o'clock. That's not too bad. But I got to play a couple things here. And then, of course, we have a Trump birthday party celebration. So I'm just going to mute all your lines. We've got who else? So Jerome's left. So we've got Dr. Brian Artis. We've got John Collin. We've got Dr. Jim Thorpe and Dr. Judy Mikovits. Finally, I'm learning how to pronounce your name correctly. So let me just mute you guys for a minute. We'll be back in about 5 minutes and give you a chance. I want to talk about the flu virus, the flu shot, and how that's connected to this as well. Then we'll get in the military, and hopefully Patrick Wood will join us soon. We can get into the whole idea of technocracy and managing all this as a sustainable thing, however they do that. All right, be right back. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis, host of Action Radio. Greetings, patriots from all across the Panhandle and from the Gulf Shores of Alabama and Mississippi. In conjunction with the Escambia Federated Republican Women, the Gulf Coast Patriots is hosting a huge birthday celebration to honor President Trump. Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., the Ultra Mega Festival and Trump Birthday Party at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds, 8604 Bobby Brown Road in Milton, Florida. All conservative groups are specially invited. Bring your family and friends for fun and games, music, food, meet and greet the candidates, pony rides for the kiddies, show off your mega gear and America First swag. This is a tailgate-style event, so bring your chairs, tables, and tents. Come celebrate the birthday of the only person to be both the 45th and 46th president at the same time, our President Donald Trump. Happy birthday, President Trump. and thank you for what you gave us. You gave us pride in our nation again. You made America First a goal that not only could be achieved, but was. Thank you for $1.85 gasoline and so much energy we could export it. Thank you for putting us on a level playing field with China. Thank you for not surrendering in Afghanistan and for trying to end the war there and everywhere we were involved. Thank you for not letting Russia invade Ukraine and North Korea for not testing nuclear missiles. Thank you for so many accomplishments when the entire Washington, D.C. deep state and the National Socialist media were against you. So let us just say now, happy birthday, Mr. President. See you all at the party, Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds. All right, let's bring back our panel here. And I'm going to be at that big festival celebration. I don't know if I'm just going to be at a table or chatting, being hosting it, or who knows what we're going to do. So let's go here. Let's get to Judy's line live. We just lost somebody, dropped off. We got John. John's back on. I think Jim Thorpe left us. I'm not sure. I think I hit his line by accident. So, Jim, if you want to call back, feel free. So we've got three. And we'll see who joins. I'm sort of waiting for Patrick to talk about the whole technocracy aspect of this. But if he doesn't join us, I certainly have enough information to get it with you folks. And, of course, with John here, that makes a huge difference, too. So I want to get into this whole idea of the flu shot and what it actually is, and does it diminish our immune system. And I want to go back a little bit. When I was at WBY, I did a lot of research on Gulf War syndrome because we had a lot of soldiers that were that had to take it, and they had to take the anthrax vaccine. And this chemical showed up called squalene, and I learned that was an adjuvant. In other words, it's kind of like an octane booster. It makes the vaccine a lot more more powerful for a lot less money. And this chemical kept showing up. It showed up as one of the main culprits in Gulf War syndrome. I think it's in the flu shot. And now that the flu shots have been quadrupled in potency, because obviously they're destroying the immune system at such a rapid rate, that they have to have more of it, this chemical keeps showing up. And so let's get to, I think actually Jim's back with us, so I'm going to check that real quick. I want to start with Judy Mikovits. How am I doing? Can you kind of trace the whole history of the flu shot and how it connects to COVID? Take all the time you want.
Sure. Well, just because every flu shot is grown in chicken eggs and or made in Darby, which is dog kidney cells, and dogs have coronaviruses, so you're literally growing the virus along with all the other coronaviruses of that animal species. In birds, in chickens, there's a deadly one called IBV. So IBV is a deadly coronavirus, and they are supposed to test for it when they do specific pathogen-free eggs. And as we were discussing earlier, they don't test for that because then they don't have to admit it was there. So, yeah, your dogs have lots of coronaviruses, and of course, the retroviruses are there. And the retrovirus is the key, is this peptide called quincitrin, which is fusogenic, and that's the one we identified in the Gulf War syndrome. We showed the same cytokine storm, signature of disease. So you start pulling out the variants. So when we do PCR, we do consensus PCR, which means we find every member of the family, which is the way it should be done. And then you're able to capture the true amount of viruses there. So, literally, there are dozens of coronaviruses and retroviruses in each of these shots. We give them on the same day with mercury and aluminum to cripple our macrophages, our innate immune responses. They can't function. They can't put out the fire. That's what they're there for. Send the fire trucks to the fire and put it out. They can't do it. They can't function. And a large part of that is glyphosate.
Dr. Judy, that squalene, is it squalene or squalene? How do we even pronounce it? Squalene?
It's squalene. So, that was in a lot of shots.
Adjuvant? That's an adjuvant?
Yeah.
So is that like aluminum? Like what's in this? Is it
an adjuvant literally keeps it on. Yeah, there's all kinds of garbage. They can't even measure the garbage. And the reason, the adjuvants, people think there's one thing in these things. And they've never tested a single shot since 1982. What's in it? They take it literally right out of the fermenter. That's the picture we draw in Plague of Corruption. and inject it in the people. They have no idea what's in it. They don't try to filter out the other viruses. They don't try to – they add the squalene in order to cripple the innate immune response so that it drives the flame even more. That's what they want. They want to drive the highest inflammation, immune activation that they can so that they could show the shot, quote-unquote, work. And they work to kill you. Really, literally, none since all liability was removed have ever been tested. They've never done a test if you can do a flu shot and a pneumonia shot on the same day. There's, you know, it's...
Well, there's no liability anymore. That's probably no coincidence. We got some background noise, too, so if someone's got laughing in the background, just you want to mute yourself. But the thing is, 1982 makes perfect sense to stop testing because in, was it, 1986, they were all liable-free. So 4 years later, you know, their liability was taken away. So why would they test further once their liability's gone in? You know, so, they stopped testing in 82, and then 86, they never have to test again because there's no liability for what they're doing.
And they never
have. You mentioned
squalene. And so everyone is a EUA. Every single year, every flu shot is an EUA. And absolutely nobody has any idea what's in them except poisons. And they know about the adjuvants they add, and they add them specifically like squalene, and they added one, and this is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. They added a CpG nucleotide, so they knew they would stop the silencing of the reactivation of dormant viruses like EBV or other influenzas for past years. So you create this, oh, so you all get shingles and you all get this, oh, I have shingles, now I got to go get another shot. And it's literally insanity, and they're driving the disease, and they know it, and they always have. And they don't do the test because they don't want to know, and then they're not liable.
Greg, you started this thread on squalene, which is an adjuvant, right? Is the panel aware, so Dr. Thorpe, Dr. Artis, Dr. Judy, are you aware that there are two different formulations of the Pfizer vaccine? And I'm not talking about Comirnaty and pre-Comirnaty. I'm talking about the actual formulation. There are two different formulations of the Pfizer vaccine, according to the FDA. I'm looking at the FDA website right now. We just don't disclose this in the United States. But Japan requires this disclosure.
And is it booster one? Is it shot one, shot two, or how do they divide it up?
No. I'm going to read.
Oh,
it
I know what
you
you're going. I know where you're going with this. No, go ahead. This is great. This is fascinating. Yeah, I know where you're going. You can ask the rest
of
the
doctors. Reading it. This is from the FDA. This is from the FDA. I'm reading it right from the website right now, and it says Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 vaccines for individuals 12 years of age and older contain one of the following sets of additional ingredients. Ask the vaccination provider which version is being administered. Colon, and then it shows there's two bullets. One of them is potassium chloride, monobasic potassium phosphate, sodium chloride, dibasic sodium phosphate dihydrate, and sucrose, or trimethamine hydrochloride, and sucrose. So there two completely different formulations. And so Mike was, when I found this out, I was like, well, did we run different clinical studies on the two different formulations? And was there a reason to create the second one? Why did we create a second formulation? What was wrong with the first formulation?
Panel?
And this is not disclosed. Yeah. This is not disclosed in the American disclosure. I found this in the English version of the Japanese disclosure on the FDA website.
Who wants in?
So I've got the document right here, FDA.gov, media, give you guys the link.
Hold on, John. I think we have a panelist.
Thank you, John. And by the way, John, thank you for your brilliant hockey career, too. Being a hockey fan, I followed you for a long time on the ice.
Thank you.
I know that wasn't you, was it?
No. He's much better looking than me. Much younger, much better looking, much more talented.
And I'm not Theo Fengelis of the soap opera game, although I get mistaken all the time, so I know how that feels.
Right.
Go ahead.
So I want to ask you, John, I think what you found, I was not aware of, but I'm extraordinarily interested in this. And I've been reviewing all of the tranches, and I've been working with Naomi Wolf and the Daily Clout team and many others. And
I want her on the show. Jim, we've got to get Naomi Wolf on the panel one day. Absolutely. Yeah, please talk to her.
For sure. She's brilliant. But I've interacted with their whole team and with the PhDs and the docs and the attorneys going through this stuff. And part of the game there was to drop, like, for example, the April 1st tranche drop, which, by the way, they said they wouldn't put out for 75 years, and the federal judge made them put it out. But in those tranches, part of the puzzle is they put 330 megabytes of data just in one tranche. So they mix a lot of very key information, but they disperse it in an unorganized fashion so that virtually nobody can follow it. And I want to say this very carefully. I don't have solid evidence, but I have a very strong suspicion that they have illegally, immorally, and unethically violated the first principle, the first commandment, the most important commandment of the Nuremberg Code, with exactly what you have described, John. So I believe, as I think what you're saying, and maybe you've proved it, I don't have definitive proof from the tranches, but it would appear to me that they are performing studies which may or may not be randomized post-marketing, which is highly illegal because nobody has been consented for this. So that's number one. Number two, in the tranches, I see the Pfizer, the BNT, there are two different, ones with a one and ones with a two. Now, with the initial one with a one, included only about 100 people, and then the two, many, many more, thousand. Nobody knows how to interpret it. My interpretation of that was that one was phase one and two was phase two. But and then three, of course, the phase three studies, and Judy and everyone, please correct me if I'm in error here, but I think the phase three studies were done post-marketing, in other words, after December 1st, 2020. But I have a very strong suspicion and was ongoing experimentation in humans without their knowledge, and that's what I am really focused on. So, John, I'd like to get together with you if you have definitive proof of that. That would really help a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't use the word proof. I use the word evidence, because to me, everything is evidence of something. And this document is from the FDA. It's their document. And by the way, there's a third formulation, which is the pediatric formulation. The pediatric formulation has the TRIS buffer. The adult formulation does not. So that means there's three different formulations of the Pfizer vaccine. The pediatric, and I'm reading this, this is from the FDA. FDA authorizes Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine for emergency use in children 5 through 11 years old. And it says that it includes a formulation that uses a different buffer. The new formulation is more stable at refrigerated temperatures, and it contains the TRIS buffer, this new formulation of vaccine developed by Pfizer. So now we've got three different formulations. When I worked on clinical trials back in the 1990s, if you had to reformulate, you had to start the trial over. You don't get to continue the trial with a new formulation and you're, you know, three steps in. You got to start all. You got to rewrite the protocol. Am I
exactly.
wrong?
No, you're.
I mean,
you're
don't you have to rewrite the? If you reformulate, don't you have to rewrite the protocol and start all over?
Absolutely, and if you add any other shot, absolutely, and it's never been done. So
we've got three different versions.
Correct.
And Jim, I've spent a lot of time with Tom Renz on the phone privately. So I was introduced to Tom Renz by Dr. Pam Popper. She was on my show. She said, my God, I got to get you and Tom together. So we did like 2 or 3 hours on Skype privately where I was walking him through the numbers. And he was stunned to the point where I think he was like, this is overwhelming.
Yeah, let's do it here publicly.
Let's get
you guys both on
here. It changes everything. Yeah. I mean, the stuff I'm bringing forward changes everything. The WHO declared a global pandemic and there weren't 10 people dead in Shanghai, Beijing, or Hong Kong. By the way, Vietnam for a year had fewer than 500 people dead. Vietnam is 100 million people. It's bigger than any country in Western Europe. Vietnam is more people than Germany, more people than the UK. Like 98 million people. No one had died, like 135 people in the first year.
So how do you explain
then
it?
Then they began their vaccine program.
Oh.
And today there's over 40,000 deaths in Vietnam. And if you look at the Johns Hopkins map, you know, there's a saying that, you know, correlation does not equal causation, right? So just because you see that when they vaccinate people, people start dying, and no one was dying before that, doesn't necessarily mean it was the vaccines, but it's a good place to start your investigation.
Well, it seems like they faked COVID by disguising it behind flu until they could actually give enough people COVID through the vaccine. And they'd scare people into taking the vaccine by having the existence of COVID. This is such a multiple-layer deception propaganda. Mm-hmm. Judy, did you say correct? Am I into something here?
I said correct.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right.
And if you do PCR testing, and the PCR uh-huh. test A does not have reconstructed H1N1, and uh-huh. B, you crank it up to 45 or 47 cycles to look for this SARS-CoV-2 thing, you'll
find
SARS-CoV-2 on a piece of cantaloupe. It's airborne.
That
right?
I've
it's
heard.
Airborne.
That I've heard. Yeah.
It's airborne, well, right? Well, the president of Tanzania mm-hmm. wasn't willing to play with Bill Gates, wasn't willing to buy the vaccines, and 30 days later, he died of a heart attack.
He's not the only one. There was a Jamaican or another Caribbean leader, or Haiti. The president of Haiti died after refusing the vaccines, and there's one other one. There's three of them.
Must be a coincidence.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't know how much we believe in coincidences on this show.
But in all seriousness, I want to make sure the panel understands. I'm looking at FDA announcements. I'm looking at FDA documents that mm-hmm. are describing three different formulations of Comirnaty.
Well, here's
of the Pfizer vaccine.
But I got a question for you because you're the data guy. You'd be able to answer this. What I had heard is that there are different formulations. I've heard that before. I didn't hear three. I hear two. But there are radically different death rates depending on the formulation. I'm guessing the first one you mentioned, which seems to be from my basic high school chemistry, salt and sugar, potassium, sodium, sucrose.
I can't correlate.
That's a placebo.
So there was a report that I saw. I think Dr. Artis saw this also, which was that there were certain batches that had remarkably higher death rates.
That's what I
then,
got.
Tell me. And it wasn't like 80-20. It wasn't 80-20. It was like 99-1. It was like a handful of batches accounted for quite a few deaths. But then they don't tell us when they made this switch in formulation. So, why did we have
no
a second formulation? What was wrong with the
first
one?
No tracking of the different versions or not? Or did they just send them out?
I don't think anybody knew there were different versions. I don't think people knew that there was a trimethamine version and a version without trimethamine.
What's trimethamine? Because that seems to be the difference. The other stuff seems like salt and sugar. That's like placebo. But triethamine, I've never heard of that. What does that do? That's an organic chemical. That's like Roundup. It sounds like something you'd have in a carcinogenic pesticide. What is that? John, do you know what it is?
I don't know. You're going to ask the doctors.
Let's ask the doctor.
I'm the map guy. Yeah, you're going to ask doctors.
We all have our expertise. And me, I talk too much. I'm a host. Judy, what is that stuff? Do you know?
Yeah, I don't. I was just looking it up. You know, it's some kind of amine, but I don't know what it's used for. And
Next week.
We don't know why they're there.
Who knows what it is?
This is the problem. Nobody knows what's in these shots. People remember, when you do a phase 3 study, the humans were the study. All the animals die. So you have to do high, medium, and low dose and a saline control. So, you know, experimenting with your adjuvants, you know, again, we do this every single year. Every flu shot is an experiment. They throw new adjuvants in it. The squalene adjuvant was in the cervix version of HPV, and that did enough damage to the girls, particularly the girls. So we know they've been experimenting for 4 decades unchecked as in all of these shots. It's not just the COVID shot. That's why I keep telling you that, none of what they've done is legal with informed consent. Ever.
Is that to make girls infertile, the HPV? Is that the ultimate goal of that one? Or what's it for?
And it killed them. It killed the kids with myocarditis. They were dropping dead on the athletic field. And so they had a similar virus-like particle in that. They got all kinds of cancers I don't want to do myelopoiesis. So they were driving the innate immune response to AML, which is usually a cancer of 80-year-olds. And it's now, we did 3 cases in vaccine court of HPV vaccine and AML, literally acute myelogenous leukemia, which is deadly. And of course, it had nothing to do with the shot in a teenager, a 9-year-old. You don't do it.
So wait a minute. So the HPV was killing girls with myocarditis and the COVID snake oil jab killing boys with myocarditis too?
No, the boys were dying with myocarditis too. They gave HPV to everybody. Yeah, these kids
were
dropping dead on the athletic field. This was what Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Aaron Seary, and we were working on the case with a lawyer in Burbank, because they committed fraud on that. And Bobby has been doing it. That case is still out there, because when they commit fraud with their so-called placebo control, they weren't doing a placebo control with just saline. They had other things mixed in there, and they failed to disclose, and they misrepresented the data. This has been going on. Most of my experience comes from the 5 years that I worked in vaccine court as an expert witness, and every single case was cytokine storm, and the court and the government said they don't exist. They don't exist. There's no such thing. It doesn't leave the injection site. I mean, we're listening to the same narrative, and this is why my entire position is that what COVID-19 was kill all the people you've experimented on over the last 4 decades, everyone with HIV, XMRV, all of these things you've injected into them and caused all of the PTSD, the Gulf War, the ME, myalgic encephalomyelitis, the autism, the cancer, cremate them all, call it COVID, and you're golden. Remember, we've got to cremate them now, because we can't dig up the bodies later and realize what they did.
Panel?
Sorry, I'm just that negative Cherokee Indian
who
knows what it's like when they kill you.
Well, yeah, and this is why I got to get Chief Dan Skyhorse as one of our guests, too. He used to be on the show all the time. We had a regular Creek Tribe report. It was quite fascinating. And I said last week the same thing. He says, you want to know what's going to happen to the rest of you? Look what they do to Native Americans or American Indians. It's pretty clear. Let's get to, unless anybody has another comment, the whole idea of the military, because we're going to talk about them. Oh, who wants to jump in? Is that Jim?
I was going to jump in just with Judy about the young athletes and the myocarditis. Just an update on that. The International Olympic Committee in Lausanne, Switzerland, they studied documents from international data banks 1966 to 2004. Those documents showed about 1,101 sudden deaths in athletes under 35 years of age, an average of about 29 per year. What we have seen now in 2021 and 2022 so far, nothing short of stunning and catastrophic. And everybody really knows this. Because we've seen the reports, despite the fact that the mainstream media and social media throw these people under the bus and deny them, call them crazy. But we're looking at a stunning graph of athlete collapse and deaths of 2021 to 2022. So we started out at about, say, 4 per month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the time we got up to our peak, we're at about 120 120 to 132 per month. Now we're talking about collapses and deaths. So this, I think to John Cullen's point, yes, there's a huge difference between a casual relationship and a causal relationship, even though you're just switching those two vowels, the A and the U, they're very different. We all know that. But when we look at the criteria for defining causality, one of them, to John's point, is the temporal relationship. And when you look at the temporal relationship of this stunning graph, it's very concerning and very suspicious. Now, these people didn't die from COVID-19. These are young athletes.
This is the world's healthiest people. This makes no sense. We just lost a 38-year-old football player, and I have my own little list I'm forming. When they don't give the cause of death, I assume it's a COVID jab because they don't want to give the cause of death. Most times, let's confront this. You pretty much tell pretty quickly these days with technology what kills a person. So if they just say natural causes and they don't know, they're lying to us, right? Would that be a fair assumption?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I think that the other concern I have is that this fake, fraudulent narrative, that the people that are pulling this horrible charade on the people of the world, responsible for killing and maiming millions, is that these are horrible people, okay? They enjoy killing. They have so much money and so much power. That
name names. Who are we talking about?
They thrive on blood and killing people. So get it out of your mind, you listeners, that the people are out, the government, all these people that are directing this, they don't care about life. You know, this whole charade, again, I don't, of focusing on some lives and not other lives. I mean, you know, why is it, and I don't want to get us off track here, but I do want to say that.
No, go. This is important. Say the whole thing. Yeah.
About 200 kids have been killed in mass school shootings. Okay, that's it. That's about right. Every weekend, there are multiple kids killed in black-on-black gang violence. But the media is deathly silent. Now, you do the math. If you have only 200 kids, you know, over 30 years that are killed in mass school shootings, why are we ignoring my African-American brothers and sisters, kids, who are being murdered every weekend? And by the way, this is in the state that has the most strict gun regulation of any state in the country. Okay, clearly the anti-gun legislation doesn't protect lives. So why are we throwing our African-American brothers and sisters, why do we not care about killing my African-American brothers and sisters? Why do we not care about that, yet we focus on, you know, a few white kids, you know, maybe.
Well, they're Hispanic in Texas. This is one of the interesting, you know, little quirks about this, but they don't mention race.
You know,
it's not a racial killing like some of the other ones have been.
And you go to, I'll extrapolate this analogy one more step. They don't care, love killing people. They don't care what color. They especially love killing black people. They love it. That's why the Planned Parenthood, the queen of abortion, Margaret Sanger, she was a eugenicist. She hated black people. She was a horrible eugenics racist. And by the way, these were all bad. This is a Democratic platform. They love killing babies. Any Planned Parenthood in any city of the United States kills more baby in one morning or one afternoon than the, you know, than many, many years of gun violence, or an entire year of AR, you know, automatic rifle shootings of kids. So, but we don't really care about the million vulnerable children that we have murdered since Roe versus Wade. So if we really cared about life, we would be approaching this issue differently. But, you know, if the very fact that they threatened me and all the other people on this panel, physicians all around the world, for using early treatment, they threatened us, they censored it. They're responsible for killing millions from COVID because early treatment of COVID has 90%, probably 99%, if you look at Ben Marvel's data, effective in preventing death. So they had to stop us from using early treatment so they could roll out the vaccine. And by the way, one of the criteria for rolling out an experimental vaccine is that there are no other therapies. Well, there was other therapies.
We talked about that with the bill that I wrote with Dr. Zelenko, and it's really critical that this isn't talked about enough, that the only reason these so-called vaccine, these snake oil jabs are out there is because they demonized and made illegal the things that made the vaccines illegal, which was hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, and all the other things you guys have, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, you know, and we've talked about those on the show any number of times. But the only reason that those jabs are out there and the only reason they got an EUA is because they violated the system. That's why we wrote a bill that took EUAs out of the hands of the FDA, put it into Congress and the president, as well as the FDA, and to override them. Because if the FDA, which is solely owned by the big pharma, if that's the only place you can get an emergency use authorization, and in that process, the FDA can demonize the only two things in the way of these EUAs, you know, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and any other early treatment, then we've got a problem. You've got a rigged system. You've got a government, corporate amalgamation, which is the definition of fascism. That's why I call them Dr. Fascist. And then there's the money involved. And they're a corporation. They're an entity. There's a government corporation. So they've mandated, you know, the vaccine. They've mandated the treatments. They caused the mass psychosis as a marketing plan. This is a business. That's the scariest thing about this. And I'm sort of waiting for Patrick to join. He doesn't. I'm going to get into it very soon. But ultimately, this is a business. This is a government corporate fascist conglomeration. Right?
Indeed.
John?
Disaster capitalism.
Yeah, I covered the U.S. Code 360, BBB.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what I wrote on.
On yep, so I covered that in a podcast, and then Maria Bartiromo picked it up that week. So I covered it, and then Brett Weinstein and his wife, they picked it up the next day after I reported it. Brett Weinstein's wife, Heather Haying, who's right. One of the world's leading authorities on tree frogs. I don't know if you know that. Heather Haying tree. Yeah, she's like a Bolivian tree frog expert.
How do they fit
some sort of poison? Yeah,
speaking
I don't know. She's just she's a super genius. But anyway, but they were talking about. I did a show on it. Because Tucker Carlson had Dr. Peter McCullough on, and
right.
I was saying why were they suppressing hydroxychloroquine? Why would they not let doctors prescribe ivermectin? Why was this such an insane? Well, so I did a show on it, and then Heather Haying and Brett Weinstein picked it up the next day or two, and then Maria Bartiromo addresses it with Pierre Corey and Senator Johnson. And says, isn't it true that had ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or any combination, it could have been Zithromax and aspirin, it could have been anything that's readily available, had been found to be effective, there is no EUA for a vaccine. No EUA will be granted. If
that's how you know it's a pandemic.
That's
the evidence of the pandemic, that they had to get rid of these two because they knew they wanted to push the snake oil jab. Who else wanted to know that?
All right. Well, hang on. And
okay.
Yet,
and just to your point, Fauci himself funded and published a study, his lab from SARS-CoV-1 in 2004, I think.
Yeah, 2005. I have that and published that too. Yeah. That's part of the video that I did. It was obvious. And back then, it wasn't hydroxychloroquine. It was just chloroquine. But there were a lot of people on that paper. And the interesting thing is the people on that paper were people like Jeffrey Taubenberger, the guy who participated in the resurrection of the H1N1. So it's the same group of people that have been working on this. Now, there's a medicine that's very important for the audience to hear about, because if in fact the CDC's data is accurate and influenza is the number one comorbidity, why would you not want to treat the influenza? If it turns, so for example, let me share this with you. 5% of the approximately 1 million people that died in the United States with COVID had just COVID-19 on their death certificate.
Mm-hmm.
5%. It's about 50,000 people.
Yeah.
About half, just shy of half, about 47% had COVID-19 and influenza on the birth certificate, on the death certificate. So that's about 450,000 people. What that means is that it's almost a 10-to-1 ratio of people who died just with SARS-CoV-2 versus people who died with SARS-CoV-2 and influenza. 10 times more people died with the combination. Why would you not want to use this remarkable product from Japan called Xofluza from Shionogi?
Yeah.
So Xofluza comes from Shionogi in Japan, a big Japanese pharmaceutical company. And Dr. Timothy Cunningham was so amazed by the result. He worked at the CDC, and now he's dead. But Dr. Timothy Cunningham was so amazed by Xofluza, he was saying, we don't really need vaccines for influenza anymore. This thing is so effective, it's like, you just take one in the morning. And it, by the way, it's a one-pill dose, and it eliminates influenza. It's called Xofluza with an X.
I remember it. You told me last time about this.
And so the question is, well, why wouldn't we want to treat people with both? Why wouldn't you tell people that you may have influenza too, so we're going to need to do a culture and figure out which strain it is? Pete, what Kerry Mullis was trying to explain to people, you're never – there's – the number of H's and the number of N's in influenza, it's like you can have up to 13 H's and up to 8 or 11 N's. So there's over 200 combinations, potentially, of influenza. You have H8N5. You
what does
H11N7?
What does H mean and what does N mean?
Back to Dr. Judy and Dr. Thorpe.
Okay. Panel?
H and N are basically nomenclature designations of certain antigens on the influenza virus. Judy?
Is Judy there? She's there. She's live.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
That's
yeah.
Okay. Well,
sorry. I was, I didn't
break.
Unmute myself. Yeah. They're basically codons in the various nucleocapsid, neuraminidase, the various, parts of the virus that are the pathogenic parts. That's what they did with the H1, with the one they cloned from the Alaskans. They added, they only pulled those sequences in those particular parts of the virus. They didn't take the whole virus. They just put the deadly parts of the virus into an infectious molecular clone and just added it to the database and injected it into various flu vaccines. They've been doing that, the synthetic ones, because you can't, it's called noceum, because once they inject it in all the other strains that are in these animals, it disappears. That's Barrick's noceum method. Yeah, when you make a very specific infectious molecular clone, they can pretend like it evolved naturally. But that's the nomenclature for various parts of the virus that are pathogenic. And I believe it was the nucleocapsid they pulled out of the pandemic influenza. And they showed that in the 2004 paper. And they did the same thing with SARS-CoV-2, the monkey virus. They took very specific codons to weaponize the vaccine, the COVID-19 shot, so that it would evade innate immune system that would degrade it, the RNA.
And that's where you get your furin cleavage sites and your CGG sequences.
Correct.
Which are
correct.
Specifically selected for their qualities.
Correct. And the CG site stopped the methylation, which is the on-off switch of the virus. It's called the long terminal repeat. The on-off switch is what turns it on and off in the genome. And so that's why you need CGs, because they soak up the methyl groups. Glyphosate makes that worse, because dimethylglycine is a naturally occurring amino acid that will put the methyl groups on it and silence it. Glyphosate is glycine with phosphate on the end, and it literally stops you from making two things, glutathione and from methylating and silencing the virus. They weaponize the vaccine because the monkey one didn't bother anybody but the most vulnerable. They've been injecting it since 2004.
Isn't that also Roundup? Aren't you also describing
that's
Roundup?
Glyphosate. Yes, I am. That's glyphosate is the active ingredient in that.
So you can be exposed to it whether you like it or not because your neighbor's using it.
Correct. And the glyphosate acts like a vacuum cleaner to literally pull these sequences into what's called XPR1, which is a phosphate transporter. So post-translational modifications of proteins, the on-off switch of the cytokine storm, NF-kappa-B, the nuclear factor kappa-B, turn it on and you get that cytokine storm. Well, it's held in the cytoplasm by something called inhibitor kappa-B. And when inhibitor kappa-B is phosphorylated, it releases NF-kappa-B to the nucleus. So if you have glyphosate, you literally stick that on switch, that cytokine storm on. And we discovered all of these mechanisms in the 90s with HIV/AIDS. That's why they knew exactly what they were doing to to cause disease in the strongest in our society. That, you know, keep that, because that inflammatory switch will go off. And so the glyphosate poisoning is a really key part of it. And this is, I know, what Brian and Stephanie Seneff have been testifying. And you also mess up sulfur metabolism. And so she and I have been working for almost a decade to show that any retrovirus, and again, SARS-CoV-2 is a pararetrovirus. It is not a coronavirus. And it's very important, because hepatitis B is a pararetrovirus. That means it acquires the ability to infect cells and destroy that innate immune system, that monocyte macrophage, where you can tell the pathogenic and the non-pathogenic strain. This is literally my PhD thesis of why HIV doesn't cause AIDS in 1992. This is literally my entire life's work. And I could see them weaponize it, as I've been screaming for the last 20 years, and nobody's listening, and the band plays on, and Tony Fauci kills more and more people. Sorry, my commercial.
No, it's okay. We need to hear this, you know, because he's out there. You know, he is the modern Dr. Mengele and Joseph Goebbels rolled into one. He's his own propagandist, and he's a monster. People need to know that.
Amen.
Right. And it's planned by the FDA. We made a product. I say we. I work for a company called Genius, G-E-N-Y-O-U-S, Chinese guys with a spelling problem. And in 2004, we started making an anti-inflammatory drug that would moderate those pathways that we're talking about, including the purinergic pathways, which is what ivermectin and Thuramin do, the antidotes for these things, turn down the flame. We made that drug. It's been through phase 1, 2, 3 clinical trials. We tried to get Merck to go in on it. We showed it would stop the virus-associated disease, whether it's Ebola, wherever you see that cytokine storm, you don't care what the virus is. That's your hit and run. All you have to do is turn off the flame and normalize the immune response. We tried, you have to buy the FDA. They told this small company, all privately funded, I think they put in $80 million of their own money of this Chinese family, and it never made it to market. You have to get in line and bribe them, and, I mean, it's awful. And I have a patent in this.
literally a patent for use these natural products and protect the rest of the immune system, and these viruses don't hurt anybody. They knew exactly which pathways they were targeting to override in the shot that's called COVID-19 vaccine. And every booster is, yeah, they're boosting the ones that they gave the saline and the non-toxic varieties. You know, I just don't understand why anybody would ever get another shot, and I really appreciate Jerome, Master Sergeant Jerome, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who called five doctors, Bobby Kennedy, me, and five other doctors from the Nation of Islam, to his home on December 18th, 2020, and said, do I recommend this shot for my people? And at the end of the day, he said, I heard you. And he did not, and saved 5 million black people.
So what went wrong with Trump, just to change things around a little bit? Because he was on the right track. He was listening to Dr. Solanko. He was taking hydroxychloroquine. He seemed to be, keeping the Dr. Fascists and the health Nazis at bay. And then something changed. Something changed,
yeah.
Whether it was the pandemic playbook.
March 28th, occurring
with the asteroids. And what was that year again? 2020, right?
So he declares a national emergency on Friday the 13th of March.
Well, that's interesting.
There's not 100 people. There's not 100 people dead in the United States.
So why did he declare an emergency?
There's not 10 dead in Beijing. There's not 10 dead in Shanghai. There's not 10 dead in Hong Kong. Nobody's dead in Vietnam, which neighbors China. I think there's one or two dead in Thailand. I'm looking around the region. I'm looking at the map. I'm looking at neighboring countries like Mongolia that shares a huge border with China. There's nobody dead. I'm like, so why are we declaring this global pandemic? And then you look at, well, so they were worried about Italy and France. And again, what do they have to do with Wuhan? Meanwhile, today, by the way, Wuhan today has fewer people dead than Connecticut. Today.
So what did they do differently? What are the reasons? What have you found?
It's how it was spun.
Okay.
You were told a story about, so this is act one of the play, about what's happening in Wuhan is so dramatic, we have to stop air travel globally. We've got to put all the planes out in the desert, wrap them up, because this is a disaster. And we're going to close all the observatories around the world. Just coincidentally, we're going to close all those.
So you still haven't told us what the asteroids have to do with this. I'm waiting for Act 3.
Well,
what's going on?
So President Trump is saying Fauci's out of his mind. This thing's nothing more than a flu. The guys from NORAD come and show him a better version of the model that I made. So I went to the JPL thing and I look at what's happening in 3D and I record the screen as I'm doing it.
Right.
And that's what I shared with Laura Ingraham privately. So she and I watched this together when she was, home in bed with her kids or whatever on a Sunday morning. And she's watching and going, oh, my God, this is kind of crazy, right? And so I think she felt she was close enough to the president that if something like this was happening, she would know. And the fact that she was finding out about it from me was awkward for her because I think she felt she was part of his inner circle at that time.
Well, she was
so
one of the people that broadcast what I broadcast. I beat her by 2 weeks because I broadcast this March 2nd that chloroquine kills COVID based on the Dr. Didier Roux study in Marseille, France.
Yeah.
She was on top of
a lot of the alternative aspects of it. She had Dr. Scott Jensen on her show from Minnesota.
Yeah.
And he was the one who said, you realize that hospitals are getting $13,000 for an admission. They get three times that, $39,000 if you were admitted and intubated.
Yep.
And if the hospital is a larger one, like one of these bigger operations like Kaiser Permanente or, Banner Health, these huge operations, and they have more than 100 admissions, they get $77,000 for each admission prior to something like June something 2020. So there was a huge incentive for these big hospitals to admit
plus
people
remdesivir,
and intubate them.
Plus, and we talked. I call it the remdesivir ventilator death march, where you're in the hospital. You know, as long as you don't get to the hospital, you're pretty, you know, you should be early treatments, you know, much better off. Like,
so
99%
it was Dr. Scott Jensen.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Dr. Scott Jensen from Minnesota is the one that kind of broke that on Laura's show. But again, you ask what changed Trump's attitude, what changed his perspective. So they show him the model, and on the 13th, he declares a national emergency. And then less than 2 weeks later, one of them hits. One of them hits the earth in Nigeria. You can look at the picture of the crater. It's all, you know, you have to dig
but
for
I'm,
it. But
I'm still not clear how this ties in. How do the asteroids tie into COVID?
Because now he's building field hospitals and telling you these are not for COVID. Don't bring your COVID patients here.
Okay.
This is if the hospitals are overflowing. Why would the hospital?
Okay, what am I missing? What am I?
So you're experiencing cognitive dissonance. All right, so here's what it is. You're experiencing cognitive dissonance because it's such a weird aspect of this story.
Right.
It's like, what? You were told that Jacob Javits Center was for excess COVID patients.
Right. I know about that. I know about the hospital ship. I know about all that. What I don't know about is the asteroid connection.
Right. Well, the asteroid connection is, what the hell do you need field hospitals all over the country for 10 days for a respiratory infection?
Ash from the asteroid impact?
Well, I don't know if you saw any of these movies like Greenland or Don't Look Up or what have you, but if an asteroid had impacted, you know, like the one that impacted Akure, Nigeria, if that had landed in Beverly Hills, anywhere, you know, Orange County, California, at the mall. Yep.
Now it's starting to make sense. Now you're connecting the dots, John. It's so much nicer. All right. So
they're looking at a JPL projection. They're looking at a JPL projection. This is April 28th, 2020.
Uh-huh.
They all come together at the Earth. It's like there's it's like this gravitational, it's the strangest thing I've ever seen. And that's why I sent it to Laura Ingraham. I had only met her 2 weeks earlier. I had just been introduced to her.
Well, you know, I went on the show too. now that we're making a guest list.
Knowing her, I said to her, you got to get on the phone with me. You've got to see this. This is game-changing. The field hospitals have nothing to do with COVID. Nothing. The ship. And they told you that verbatim. They said, don't bring your COVID patients to Jacob Javits. Don't bring them to the Moscone Center. This is in case the hospitals have overflow.
Yeah.
COVID... this is why Trump now is like, thank God I've got a pandemic and I can blame it on the Chinese and the pandemic. So China virus, China virus, China virus, get the field hospitals up. Stay in your house. They don't want people on the roads. Remember, you weren't allowed to drive like in April of 2020?
Oh, I drove anyway. I'm such a rebel.
You couldn't be on the roads. It's like unless you had official business or whatever, you were a certain kind of person in a certain kind of job, they didn't even want you on the roads.
Yep.
And then
that
May 1st.
Yeah.
Right. And then they put them all away May 1st. And then the closest asteroid to miss the Earth in history, May 5th. Oops.
Huh.
Oops. We don't see them coming. We see them as they pass. That's kind of the problem. We see them as they miss.
Interesting.
And this is all documented on my channel, on the Johnny Hoover channel. There's a video called Don't Look Up, you know, real.
Well,
and there's a video. This is great. Where you can see 3D. You can see 3D meteors and all this stuff.
Yeah. I want to jump to a different thing here while I've got you. We only have about 50 minutes left. Do you believe it? This is how fast this goes. I'm going to take a break in a few minutes real quick because I have to play one more thing. But I've been looking for this feverishly, and it's one of those articles. I have a whole file of early COVID articles. Those are the only ones that are halfway decent. And one of them talked about a briefing that both the Democrats and Republicans got separately, which is interesting, on the fact that everybody's going to get exposed to COVID. And this was March of 2020, March 11th of 2020. It was in Daily Beast, but they don't let me see it anymore. Does this name sound familiar? Rajiv Venkaya. When you mentioned Japan and this Zofluza that cures the flu, I immediately thought, well, this article, this guy that briefed Congress was from Japan. Rajiv Venkaya, I guess he's Indian. And it comes from this group called pharmaceutical giant Takeda. Do you know anything about them? Did they make Zofluza? Is there a connection here that we haven't explored yet?
No, I don't know if there's a connection between Takeda and Shionogi. Shionogi is the company that makes Zofluza. It's very respected in Japan, but like Dr. Judy found out, if you're not part of this inner circle with the kickbacks and the patent money exchange, right? You know that the people that work at the NIH, if they work on something that gets patented and the thing goes to market, they get money back from Pfizer and from Sandoz and whatever, right? With all of that, if you're not part of that inner circle, Dr. Judy just told us a story, right? She had the patent. They were trying to bring a drug to market, couldn't do it. And they had $80 million and couldn't pull it off. So I think Shionogi suffers the same thing. How the guys from Moderna, I don't know how Moderna worked their way into the club.
Moderna was created specifically for messenger RNA vaccines. I remember the head of it, Dr. Whatever, did a TED Talk saying we've hacked the software of life.
Yeah.
Moderna is a government. Well, let's talk about the money aspect, because it makes sense to me that if they wanted to, they couldn't have Zofluza on the market, the cured flu. If they had that, they wouldn't need their flu vaccine, right? I mean, this is the whole purpose of keeping that off the market.
Well, and that's where there's a group of people that believe that that's why Dr. Timothy Cunningham drowned in the Chattahoochee River.
Mm-hmm. We've got a new panelist here, Dr. Deborah Viglione, who put on these wonderful rallies in Pensacola at Blue Wahoo Stadium. She's only been on for a couple of minutes, hasn't had a chance to really listen in. So, Deborah, if you want to, you have questions, comments, if you want to leap in the conversation, or you just want to hang out for a little bit and catch up what's going on, we've got a lot. We've covered a lot, but we still have a fair amount of ground to cover. So welcome to the show.
Listen for a bit.
I like it. Just when you feel like it, yeah. Well, we're not getting to Patrick, so go ahead. Judy, do you want to say something?
Can I just dig in a minute? I just looked up Takeda, and this Andrew Plump, MD, PhD, the president of research and development, was educated at UCSF. He worked for Merck and Sanofi. There's a little connection there, money. And
I found it interesting.
And he's a cardiologist.
Huh. Oh, myocarditis. There you go. Why was a Japanese company briefing Congress? That's another question. Why was a Japanese pharmaceutical briefing Congress that everybody is going to be exposed to this anyway? That's interesting. Where are the American companies?
Well, most of the people on this board are American.
That's
connected to the cabal over in Europe.
Okay.
The whole deal with Sanofi, and these are the guys that sit in the advisory committee on immunization practices and direct our weaponized CDC.
Interesting. I have to say one quick two-minute break, just play one thing, and I want to come back. I want to talk about this whole idea of the technocracy angle of this and why the military. And are they trying to destroy the military because it's a threat to the globalists and just a bunch of other things. And the other thing I want to talk to Patrick about, if you were here, I watched a video of him last night. You guys can talk about this too. But he was talking about technocracy, these technocrats, these techno-bureaucrats that want to control all the resources and control all our energy. So what's happening now makes sense, that they're stealing our oil, raising the price of everything, this inflation, this is all about the control, that they're in control and that they're taking it away from us. And as I'm looking at this, I'm thinking to myself, if they're in resource control, what is the ultimate resource? Well, the ultimate resource is people. And that's where COVID comes in. So they've controlled the oil, they've controlled the air, the water, they've controlled where we can travel, they've controlled our economy, they've controlled everything else. Now they're going after us individually. And this has been coming for some time. And this is what I wanted to get to. And I'm sorry he's not here on the show, but I think it's worth talking about. And then the idea of the military. Why is the military always the ones that are so impacted by this? Why do they get the Gulf War anthrax vaccine, even the people that aren't going into the Gulf? You know, why are they always the ones that are forced beyond anybody else? It's always the military. Is there some aspect of this, the technocracy, that doesn't want a military, an independent military, where I have the UN, you know, blue hats, blue helmets running the show here? It's all these things I want to talk about. So I'm going to meet you all for just a sec. Sorry, Deborah, I know you just joined us, but I'm going to get this out of the way, because then once we get started, we're going to rip through the rest of this show. And then afterwards, we're all off the air. We can talk about doing another 3 hour one next week, because this is fun. I'm definitely enjoying this. So let me just do this really, really quickly here. I'm just going to find one thing for you on Declaration of Independence, about 2.5 minutes, and then we'll be back.
This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers.
Well, you couldn't ask for better timing. Patrick Wood has just joined us. I'm going to make his line live. I've got Dr. Deborah Viglione. We've got Dr. Jim Thorpe. We've got Dr. Brian Artis. We haven't heard from him for a while. Wake up, Brian. John Cullen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's sitting somewhere on the California beaches. And we're all here. Patrick Wood, welcome back to Action Radio.
Hey, nice to be with you. I didn't know if I was going to get in this way, but I called and you saw me. Great.
Well, that's the idea. You know, that's how we all get in. So
that's right.
Once you get that far. Well, here's what I want to ask you. And of course, the rest of the panel, feel free. We've got a good panel. You guys are kind of used to sort of the informal nature of how we do things. Just leap into the conversation. You don't need me. Ideally, I'll just ask a big question. Just sit back and listen. But, Patrick, I was going over your video, the 2019 video, on the whole idea of technocracy and the control of resources and the control of energy and all the things that are happening right now. And what it struck me is that the biggest control of the biggest resource is people. And that COVID is an economic plan. This is why the World Economic Forum and the Economic Councils and the globalists and the Great Reset, most of what they're doing is economic. And COVID is above anything else, a marketing plan to make a lot of people extremely rich in a fascist cabal of government and industry. And using the laws against us and using everything against us. Let's start with that whole idea, like I say, and we can develop this as we go, or tell me any part of the story that I'm missing. But is ultimately the technocrats, the technocracy, about controlling people as a resource as well as everything else?
Well, that's right. And when
when they
originally talked about management of resources of the world, what wasn't made apparent at the time was that they included people. And people are resources just as much as old crops on a farm or trees in a forest or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And to the technocrat mind, people are the last resource, if you will, to be brought under subjection to to technocrat control. Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is why I asked you the question. It makes perfect sense to me, but I want to confirm it. And, and then we'll get to Deborah and Jim and then Brian and John and Judy. We'll go through our panel. But I think this is critical for understanding, putting COVID in perspective of the world government, of the resource control, of these people that took Plato's Republic way too seriously. They're ruled by the good, and they declared themselves the good, and they're not. And here we are.
Well, Patrick? No, they're not. You're right. There were multiple, when COVID hit, there were multiple objectives, I believe. I don't think it was just a simplistic thing. It was just one thing.
Okay.
Control over people certainly was one. Introducing the idea of genetic modification to the human body was another.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very important to carry out the destruction of the global economic system so that the Great Reset could take place. And immediately when COVID hit, we saw the supply chain almost immediately buckling. We saw businesses go out of business all around the world, really, not just in America. We saw dislocation in major commodity sectors. All of these things have been kind of on the target list for years. COVID really activated this. It kind of turned a cold war into a hot war.
Mm-hmm.
And this continues today. Everything that's going on today, we see, you know, inflation, we see energy, we see food, all in crisis. Our economic system of the world right now is just hanging by a thread. The financial system is about to flip over, as we know. And I agree with you. It is absolutely critical to look at the economic system in light of COVID,
mm-hmm.
and realize that it's on the chopping block right now. They want to implement this other system. The United Nations calls it sustainable development, by the way, but it is technocracy warmed over from the 1930s. And the UN has said openly in the past that it wants to change the prevailing economic system into sustainable development. That's what the Great Reset is all about. That's what Klaus Schwab means when he says, by 2030, you will own nothing and be happy.
I got a little background noise. I don't interrupt Patrick, but I want to make sure that if you're not talking, you're mute, because anything out there picks up real quickly. I want to just one more thing before we get to the panel. Let's define sustainable development, because to me it means no development. It means either going backwards or limiting or conserving or stopping or – someone's got a dog. That happens sometimes too.
Yeah.
It's a dog.
Yeah.
It's okay. We have a dog.
That sounds like Big Leon's dog.
Is that your dog?
No.
I think that's Big Leon's dog.
No, it's your dog. So,
well, I'm going to give her a chance
to check. I think it's
Brian. Okay, you guys. This happens to get a bunch of together, and I'll have dogs. Well, at least we got you off the golf course. That's the good news. All right. Sorry, I couldn't resist. So what is sustainable development? What does it really mean? You know, what do they think of it as?
Well, sustainable development was a counterplan to what development was before, say, 1992 at least. And you might remember back, especially in the 70s and the 80s, how much other countries, and especially the Southern Hemisphere, hated our guts.
Mm-hmm.
It was legendary because those poor countries were getting raped, pillaged, and plundered by, by the multinational or global corporations that were just coming in and using the guise of development to just destroy their countries. And so there's a lot of angst back pre-1990, let's say,
mm-hmm.
Against the northern world's idea of development. So along came Agenda 21, the Agenda for the 21st Century in 1992. That was from Rio de Janeiro, the UN conference in Rio de Janeiro. And the promise was initially that we're going to set developers straight. We're going to straighten things out. We're going to have more equitable and fair arrangements with the rest of the world. And so, you know, promises were made. Yeah, it's going to be good. Just give us another chance, that sort of thing. Well, for all the promises they laid out that they were going to do, they were complete. It was just a pack of lies. And so not only was development not changed, but it was accelerated to do the very thing they said they were going to try to prevent. And so now we see that the world is much worse off as a result of all this new development, if you will. And there were authors, by the way, that understood that, the scholars that understood that back in 92 and just a little bit after that, where one writer, for instance, says, we see how, as a result of that conference, the rich will get richer, the poor poorer, while more and more of the planet is destroyed in the process. So there were plenty of critics back then, but they were suppressed. And nobody really, you know, heard from them. So development, sustainable development, is a sham. It promises things like, you know, doing away with poverty,
by making everybody poor. It makes the world poor.
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds like communism is what it
sounds like.
Like
politician, you know, politician talk, right? All promises, no delivery.
Yeah.
And that's where we are today. When we talk about the Green New Deal, for instance, in America, that's sustainable development, of course. But they're killing fossil fuels, which aren't really fossil fuels, but you know what I'm talking about, the oil.
Well, I did a show
coal,
on abiotic oil. Believe me, we did the whole hybrid carbon. We did the carbon cycle.
Right.
If you burn fossil fuels, you put carbon dioxide back in the air so the plants can breathe it. Well, that's another show. We'll do that maybe next week. But
that's a good thought. But they're trying to kill all the traditional sources of energy that we've had.
Right.
In order to manage alternative energy and manage all the consumption and production of energy in the world. And, you know, this also is a part of the original technocracy plan from the 1930s, because they were focused on controlling energy. You say, well, why was that? Well, all economic activity requires energy inputs. That's probably the most important part of economic activity. So if you can control the energy in a society, in an economy, you control everything. It's like the gas pedal on your car.
Right.
If you can push it up and down, your car's going to go faster, it's going to stop. So they know that. This is the plan, to control all economic activity on planet Earth.
So how do the people fit into this, and how does COVID fit in? And then I want to do a around the panel. That's a huge question for you know, that might take more time to answer. But how do we have to limit the population so that these alternative energies, which don't work with the current population, work with half the population? You know, how do people fit into this, and how is COVID as an enforcement tool?
Right. Limiting population has been a goal going back, way back, probably even before the 1930s, when we didn't have much, you know, nearly as much population in the world as we have today. But today, those who are in charge of, you know, the computer algorithms that they're doing the computer models with for sustainable development, humans are viewed just as another resource on planet, so they need to be managed. They conclude that there are too many of them, and therefore that the herd must be reduced in size. This is not.
Do they have a number?
Has
a number been revealed?
Well, the numbers.
Yes.
Numbers.
Yes, 500 million.
Varied.
Okay, 500 million.
That's one estimate. There have been other suggestions, like 800 million and 1.5 billion. But it's a whole lot less than what we have now.
Which is like 8 billion, roughly?
Openly, that's right. And they're not openly suggesting that we just go out and kill people nilly-willy and get rid of them. But rather, thinning the herd now is looked at by destruction of economic activity, for instance. If people will die early. They'll die young if they don't have food, if they don't have jobs where they can support themselves and access to medical care, et cetera. So,
nursing homes with COVID.
That's right, nursing homes with COVID. So you could look at the demographic information right now globally, we're headed almost straight down. Not only is the older generation getting larger, but the younger generation is getting smaller. Fertility has been going down for 30 years like a rock. Now we have the injections, the COVID injections that apparently are greatly affecting female fertility and the ability to conceive and bear children.
What about sperm count? That's so, dropping too like a rock, isn't it? I mean, each generation of men is
exactly right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's what I meant when I said, you know, for the last 30 years at least, sperm count has been going down. That's male fertility.
Wow. Right.
So the demographic curve right now is sharply pointed down. And if we last 30 years more, 40 years more, we'll see the global population go down, even if there is not one single war on the planet. Now, if there is war and there's a good chance that Ukraine's going to expand, I suppose.
Well, they're trying to.
We might see a hot war in which there are a lot of people that die suddenly. So, you know, you look at kind of humanity from the top down and you say, well, there's a lot of things really are against the human population right now. Nothing is really for it. Every country, almost every country in the world now is reporting declining numbers of babies being born, et cetera. I remember a few years ago, Russia declared something equivalent to Sex Day or Procreation Day or something like that.
Oh, can we make that a national holiday? We need that here. I'm teasing you.
Well, yeah, no, I know. Wouldn't that be something?
Well, Hungary has that.
Hungary
has that. They've got a program of increased population and helping families out. Hungary's trying to reverse that.
Well, that's the only way. That's right. That's the only way it's going to happen if people start having sex again and babies are born and delivered and they're raised up as children and into adulthood.
Yeah.
But right now, there's not a lot of activity going on in the world in that regard, and a lot of stuff is going the other way. I'm knowing Japan right now, for instance, young people have virtually lost interest in all sex altogether, whether they're married or not.
This is the thing I want to ask Judy and the rest of the panel here. Is there something in these jabs that is behavior modification, psychotropics, antidepressants, sedatives? I mean, is there any kind of – we haven't talked about the behavior modification of this. Let's go on the panel with that. Patrick, thank you so much. Don't go away, but I'm just thanking you because I love what you're saying so far. Let's start with Judy and then John and then Brian and then Jim. No, let's go with Deborah. Deborah, I haven't talked to you yet. Deborah, do you know anything about that or what do you think so far on what you heard from Patrick?
Well, one thing that I have noticed is the endocrine disruptors, I think, are a big problem here because I have multiple young men, say, you know, late teens, 20s. They're impotent. Their testosterones are in the basement. You know, something is going on, whether it's state, but these kids are not healthy and they're not producing testosterone. So that could have something to do with the decreased sex drive at this in Japan. I don't know, but I'm really wondering what's going on here. You know, because these kids should have, you know, testosterone close to 1,000, and they're talking below 200.
God, all I thought about was sex when I was a teenager, and not much has changed. But this is crazy. Is it chemical? Is there something in there? We got a little background noise again, too. Someone's got somebody. Who wants to get in on that? Well, let's go to Jim. Dr. Thorpe, what's going on? Why is sperm cast out?
Well, a couple of things. Are you all, have you ever heard of the pesticide atrazine?
I think
so.
I'm
have.
Not sure.
Atrazine is
one of the most commonly used pesticides around the world. And this broke, decades ago. Atrazine induces complete feminization and chemical castration in animal species. And this has been reproduced, no pun intended, but this data has been reproduced. But basically, what atrazine can do in humans is exactly what we've experienced. And nobody's really focused on this. But very credible data from an awesome African-American researcher, I believe, in Northern California at one of the major universities. And he published this years ago. And of course, it was the firm, the pesticide manufacturers and the drug companies, they just completely attacked this guy, but his research was borne out. So, you know, fast forward, here we are, nobody's having sex, nobody's apparently everybody's collective global interest in, you know, libido, if you will, global libido has gone down. And then, you know, not to get personal, but my wife goes into a local grocery store, and I won't mention the name, but there's I don't know what kind of sex the person was. I don't know, somewhere between the infinite numbers of
it used to be easy to tell. It used to be really easy to tell.
And,
yeah.
This person, I don't know what, who was a millennial, starts talking about my wife about him getting implanted, the birth control implant, and then starts talking to my wife about her menstrual periods, and it's like, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? First of all, is this a male or a female? Who knows? People, I think part of the gender confusion, it's multifactorial. Part of the fertility rates is, you know, same sex attraction, and I think that has been a goal of the world elites, and it might be part of the rise of this intersex and this non-binary heterosexual reproduction.
Well, if there are no genders, there's nobody to be attracted to. How's that
exactly.
For a thought? Brian, we need you back in here. Haven't heard from you for a while. Unmute and join us.
Wake up,
please.
Brian.
Wake up, Brian. Hello, Brian. Going once, going twice. John Cullen.
Oh, I'm here. I've enjoyed listening to everybody.
Yeah, we need to participate, too. Can't, you know.
Well, I don't know if you need my participation. You've got a great group of people on here.
We do. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't trade these folks for anything. But I still want your input, though, if you have some. If not, I want to go to John and then Judy.
Okay. Well, you want my input on what's happening
anything.
With why people aren't
yeah.
having sex and behavioral changes possibly with these shots?
That's – yeah. And is there something in there? I don't know. Is atrazine, is that a pesticide that we talked about? Or how's it getting in the environment? How's it getting to kids? Is it in the school lunches? I mean, what's going on here, Brian? What do you know about this?
There's no doubt that there's going to be an impact on people's hormones. Okay. Hormones directly impact your emotions and your sexual appetites and libido. So I actually am more on par with Deb Biglione's perspective on its endocrine disruption capabilities, for sure. I would not be surprised also if there is aspects of things not listed inside of the EUA ingredients lists. That actually have impact on behavioral changes. And I would not be surprised if underneath this EUA, they're allowed to put in ingredients. They're not disclosing all the ingredients. They want it to continue to be in an EUA because they're allowed to continue to experiment and make changes to those recipes. And I believe they absolutely have things they know are inside those shots that impact compliance and complicity. So being able to sit back and just be...
That's it. The rebels are going to survive and the compliant are going to be done away with. They're doing it backwards. Idiots. All right. You got me riled up now. What's an endocrine system for those of us that aren't you guys?
Endocrine is your hormone gland. So you've got your pituitary, your thyroid, your adrenals, your ovaries, your testes, your pancreas. These are all endocrine glands. They produce
hormones.
What can
hormones. Affect them? Right. So what would
what
be the most direct
them?
Way
okay,
to...
So, Jim Thorpe did a great presentation on the nanoparticle hydrogel that's actually a part of the mRNA shots. We know that gets built up in your ovaries. We've seen that over and over again from Novavax, who actually owns the patent right on that. That lipid nanoparticle gel has an impact on our hormones and actually does accumulate in the ovaries, which is a massive endocrine gland. And if it does it for the ovaries, it absolutely is impacting the testes. This is very similar tissue, almost identical, actually. So, yes, this will have an impact on our testosterone, our estrogen, our androgen hormones, which is our sex-linked hormones. So, absolutely, it's a big deal.
Let's get to the data man, John. John Cullen, what do you know about this?
Yeah. Well, I probably have a contrarian view to most of the people on the call.
Feel free.
I look at the overall population of the Earth is just shy of 8 billion people right now. 8 billion people. and we've had about 6 million die with COVID. It's a rounding error. If you really believe in the Georgia Guidestone type stuff, you got to kill billions of people. Billions. Right? If you want to get to 500 million people, you're 7.5 billion away right now. And even if you look just at the United States, which had the worst response, the worst public health response to COVID, with the most people dead per capita for a large country, nobody else has 1 million people dead, right? India doesn't have 1 million people dead, and China has fewer dead than Ohio. So the United States is the worst, with 1 million dead out of 331 million people. It's less than 1%. It's a third of 1%. It's another rounding error. So I understand the emotions of thinking it's population reduction, but you got to kill way more people. So if that's what this was, it was very ineffective.
Well, what if it was more based on compliance then, which seems more likely to me? Because if everybody's dead, who's going to do the work for these people? Is it a compliance-based thing?
Again,
is it Deborah?
It's a multi-part play. I think Patrick Wood said something similar to that. There's many aspects of this. You have the pre-vaccine aspect, and then you have the post-vaccine aspect, right? And then we're learning that, you know,
is that Judy or Deborah?
What was that?
Go ahead.
We haven't seen Deborah? The end of that. I mean, there's a lot more deaths from this vaccine.
Yeah, and it's more than that. It's in the, with everything that's been said, the syncytin gene, that fusogenic protein in the that is our human endogenous gamma retrovirus W, that regulates all of the expression of our defense to this. When you inject another animal's syncytin gene, this is the component of snake venom, you will have, as Jim said last week, you know, essentially it's better than RU486 as an abortion, a failure to conceive, a sterilization. And then with the Gardasil vaccine, we learned how to sterilize the 9-year-old. We haven't given this, and again, every animal has syncytin. So the autoimmune, auto-inflammatory responses are synergies, is how Deborah and I would say it, what she just said. We haven't seen anything at all. That's why they hammer us with the next shot and the next shot and the next shot, because the first, as John said in the beginning, this is Act One. And what we're here to do, in my opinion, is stop everybody from, you know, from ever getting another shot of any kind, because that's going to be the avalanche. The first round, and it was probably 10 times or that million, the first round has been in my, you know, opinion, but the data that support it is to kill. I mean, we knew how to create PTSD. Myalgic encephalomyelitis is chronic fatigue syndrome. Tony Fauci marginalized that too and said, oh, no, they're not sick. They're just crazy. The autism, the Alzheimer's, the Parkinson's. These are non-functioning, non-money-making people who don't die. So the latest weapons, the bioweapons, and we've seen it in all of the shots over the last 20 years, and this is why I talked about accelerated aging, the myelopoiesis. We spin the innate immune response out of control, and we accelerate aging. So we've got 13-year-olds dying of triple-negative breast cancer and AML, which is a disease of 86-year-olds. In the vaccine courts from this cytokine storm that doesn't turn off. So the first goal was sterilization, and they've achieved that. The psychosis we see, you know, the PTSD, and then to keep, you know, food away from us, to keep healing away from us, the endogenous cannabinoid system, the cannabinoids, the dimmer switch given by God. This is all of it. This is, you know, it's going to be depopulation eventually, but what it is now is, you know, you didn't agree with us and you kept having kids. So now not only can, by the disrupted nitric oxide pathways and others, it's all food. Our we don't have the amino acids to build the immune or any of these responses. And the HPA axis, the hypothalamus adrenal pituitary axis is totally out of control, as we have been saying. Everybody's on overdrive. So we saw the psychosis. We saw the Gulf War syndrome. We saw the lights are on and nobody's home. In the elderly, we call it Alzheimer's and dementia. We make movies like Still Alice. Oh, you're getting it at 50 years old. You're wearing diapers at they're converging. The children never get out of diapers, and the adults get in them younger and younger. It's accelerated aging. We've seen it in the death rolls, in the 40% overall increased death from all causes on the health insurance, as I think John said, before. And then you've got kids in masks with psychosis who can't think or can't function or can't talk, and the CDC just reduces the guidelines. So we see it's an agenda. And this is only, you know, stage one, unless we, the people can stop it now and we can educate the people and show, expose these crimes against humanity so every individual will just simply stop playing the game and buying into this, you know, destruction of planet Earth economically in every other way.
I want to get Patrick back in, and please feel free to join us earlier if we... I don't know if we're going to do this next week. I hope so. I'm kind of thinking now might be a good idea. Patrick, now that you've heard all the other folks, yeah. What do you think? How does that fit into the technocracy model?
Well, it does actually quite well, and it would be misleading to just look at COVID itself or even the injections themselves as in the near term as being the whole stimulus for population reduction. There are other society-wide issues that are pressing right now. For instance, glyphosate is found in everything today in the world. They polluted the entire planet. You've got microplastics now discovered in the gut of just about all babies and, you know, children and so on. Now, these in themselves are small little things, but they add up. They change the subtle mechanisms of the body, and there are probably several such things, the buildup of people taking vaccines and other drugs over the years and, you know, the pesticides, the plastics, et cetera, all of these things are hammering on fertility. I was just looking at a chart, by the way, a demographic chart of China. This is, believe it or not, this is China's National Bureau of Statistics. And it's produced by, I think the chart's produced by the United Nations of all people. Right now, China's population is upwards. It's probably going to reach a total of about 1.4 billion people by 2025. They're just based on current demographic structure. They're looking at the year 2100. China's population is going to be down around somewhere like 0.6 billion people. That's like 600 million people.
Well, that's
high
women.
Estimate is below one.
Their one-child policy was all men.
Well, that
right?
was part. You know, I know that was part. That's part of it. But there's lots of other factors as well. All that to say,
okay.
The demographic curve on the entire planet is already headed down, irrespective of everything else. All of the stuff we're talking about is just pushing on it. It's just pushing it to be steeper on the downside. And anything we have from here on that's going to kill people, whether it be lack of economic activity, lack of food, lack of, wars, you know, hot wars where nuclear bombs or just bombs and stuff are in play, all of these factors are going to push the population down. That is generally in line with this global elite has been trying to do for a very long time. Can we blame every single little bit of this on them? Probably not. But they're happy with the curve, and they're going to do everything that they can to exacerbate the curve and drive it down even more sharply. It's going to take a while before we see the actual population decline, but it's going to, when it starts, it's going to go down like a rock, and everybody's going to be so shocked.
Yeah. To Patrick's point, Jim Thorpe here, Deagle Institute is a very reputable research firm, and interesting, I think they came out earlier this week, Patrick, you probably saw that, and what they estimate by 2025, that's 3 years from now, the global population is going to be down 50% to 80%. Now, again, they suggest that it's multifactorial, exactly as you suggested, Patrick. And back to circling back to Patrick's point about the corporate technocracy, you know, this started, it's been going on forever, but in the United States in the early 1900s, and you have J.D. Rockefeller, well, he was part of the people group, that idea. And what he did was basically he stomped off all of the real physicians that were healing people with naturopathic therapy. He basically squelched them, put them out of business, and put the academicians into business and the universities, and he industrialized it and made massive amounts of money off it. And to the injury of us, look at the rise of chronic diseases. And so that's just one aspect. But going to Patrick's point, you know, this, and I'll quote Dr. Ken Thorpe, and one of his books that he had me read was Naomi Klein's Disaster Capitalism, going to exactly the point of Patrick and many others here. You know, she does an incredible job about stating that, yes, this disaster capitalism, what we've done over the last century is we've gone into the, quote, rescue these other countries around the world, you know, with our vast amounts of money and but what we do is we cripple the infrastructure of these countries. We completely take it over with our corporations that we bring in, and then we reap the profit at the expense of the citizens and the rich poor, and we've destroyed their local economies. One other point, we don't let any disaster go to a waste. You know, look back in 9/11, and won't get into that and what caused it, but in the early turn of the century after 9/11, go back and look at on record of General Wesley Clark and the famous speech that is all over YouTube, where he was brought in totally, he was very upset by this, was called into the hierarchy. I think that Rumsfeld and some of the other folks were there, and basically says, you know, we're going to take down 7 countries in 5 years. 7 countries in 5 years. It's classic. This is what we've done to every country in the Middle East, except Israel. But this is exactly what went on, in the Ukraine. After the Cold War, this was an incredible country that had the potential of being one of the greatest countries in the world at that time. When they split off from Russia, they had a massive, you know, engineering production. They had massive production of rockets and of all their, you know, the breadbasket of the world. What did we do? We took advantage of their split off. Our corporations went in there. We raped the country. We destroyed the country's infrastructure. It completely demolished their aeronautical and their space exploration. And now we brought the country. Now we put all these bioweapon labs in there, and we've destroyed the country, and now they're at war. So that's just a fact. You know, you look at all of the data that's led up to that. So it is corporate disasters, corporate greed that has driven this. And it's a really ugly part of our country.
Yeah. We've only got about 6 minutes left. I got Jesse on the line, who has friends in Ukraine. Jesse, a quick update for us, especially on the biolabs.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. I've been so busy in my store. I wanted to call earlier, but I couldn't. I still have customers right now. Thank you so much, guys, for the good information that you guys are giving us. I really appreciate you. That's what artists. I really would like to be on your show. I have a lot of insight from the Ukraine. I'm a missionary in the Ukraine. And also about the border, I do the report with Greg at Action Line. I do the Latino report. And as a legal Latina, I really would like to see a lot of these people being deported, going back. And a lot of the children at the border are getting the vaccine, but not the adults, like I shared with you to Dr. Artis before. And I would like to see some of your shows to you different doctors in Spanish so I can share them. But thank you so much. And
we'll
if I can be invited in one of your shows, I'm a talker.
You want to have a shameless plug? We'll get you all guys connected. But what about this? If this population is being depleted around the world, why are we importing 2 million illegal aliens this year? We have about 4 minutes left. Who wants that one? How does that fit in? Patrick, is there a technocracy?
I can answer that. There are only two places in the world where this type of incursion is being seen. That's in Europe and in the United States. Nobody's clamoring to get into China or Russia or any country in South America or Africa. It's only in these two regions. The policy of population migration was originated with the Trilateral Commission going way back into the early 1990s. And they have promoted this concept of countries opening up their borders to receive migration from southern populations from the Mideast in Europe and from South America and Mexico in North America. And this policy can be directly linked back to people, for instance, like Peter Sutherland, who was the chairman of the European division of the Trilateral Commission for many years. He's since dead. I think he died 3 or 4 years ago. But he was a guy almost exclusively responsible for going around to various countries in Europe, demanding that they set immigration quotas for people who were going to come up from the south. That was even before that invasion started. And then when the invasion started, and countries got nervous about all these people coming up, they tried to, started talking about shutting things down. Sutherland, as well as other people from the United Nations, went around to these various countries and says, don't you dare lower your quotas or disregard your quotas. You must stick to your quotas. And they browbeat them into leaving the borders open. Our border has just been open for no particular fiat reason, like from the United Nations. But, we've had an open border here now. It's come to catastrophic proportions. And this is a globalist policy to break down these two regions of the world, which traditionally have been, the strong seat of old-style globalization. This is making way for the Great Reset, just pure, in my mind, pure and simple. To bring in complete technocracy.
So we've got about 2 minutes left. So it seems to me that removing Trump from office by having a coup d'etat in our country is essentially part of this plan. And it was started long before, probably the day after Trump took office. Patrick, would that be about right?
Even long before that, for sure.
Oh.
But we have not had a president in 40, 50 years that has not allowed this technocrat column to march on and do whatever the heck they wanted to do. Republican or Democrat did not matter. And the same thing was true with Trump. The same thing is now true with Biden.
Who stopped them 40, 50 years ago?
Dr. Fauci predicted a surprise outbreak the week before Trump was inaugurated. It was the week before the inauguration. And he said, one thing is for certain, this administration is going to have a surprise outbreak. That was a deadly tell.
Can I say? But the good news is we're going to arrest them all. You watch. Game is over. They're not going to continue cheating and stealing our money from the American people. Game is over, and they're panicking. They're trying to do everything and anything possible to distract the American people. But it's over. Game is over. And I want everybody to know, and I know Greg doesn't agree with me, JFK Jr. is alive, and I have more proof now. So before I said, well, I see it, I'm not going to believe it. I have more personal insight now.
Josie, we
got
to talk. Let me just tell one thing, too. I think I talked to John about this. We have about 30 seconds. Oh, thanks, Josie. No, I appreciate it. And we do have our disagreements. But not only did Dr. Fascist predict these things, but he also, everybody, the guidelines were changed. We talked about this last week. The 2007 guidelines were replaced by the 2017 guidelines, which called for immediate lockdowns, whereas the previous ones didn't. On that note, we got about 10 seconds left. Thank you all. This has been great. Contact me after the show if you want to do another 3-hour one next week. I sort of thought we might be running out of gas, but between our new folks, John, Deborah, and Patrick, it's been absolutely fabulous. But we have to go now, so thank you all. If you want to say goodbye to each other real fast, you got about 5 seconds. Go.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for all of you.
Bye. Bye, all. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
Goodbye, everybody.
And if you called late, call in earlier next time. All right, we'll be talking. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our website where you're going to find the bills. We didn't talk about this time, but hopefully we will next time at writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And for all our guests, please put those on your website, and we shall get these into the national debate and go from there.